What will be the Republican rank is going to be a fellow who's quickly risen through the ranks and is a Tea Party favorite. Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana is going to be the party whip. It fills now the trifecta, the party leadership, as this ensues this year. Kevin McCarthy of California gets the number two spot. And, of course, right now we know, of course, it's John Boehner is the Speaker of the House, the number one Republican in the House.
I do want to thank my colleagues and my constituents for the honor they've entrusted me to be the next majority whip. I'm looking forward to bringing a fresh new voice to our leadership table and joining with this team to help confront the challenges that people all across this country are facing. We've got solid conservative solutions that are
One of the things we pushed in RSC is we are not only pushing the president, but we pushed our leadership in the House to commit to holding the line on those cuts that came out of the sequester. $85 billion of real cuts. And even though there was pushback, we finally held that. Even though the president pushed for this a year and a half ago, and then he tried to back away from it. So we're going to force Washington to start living within its means.
That's what families do.
Contrast what we believe in with the failures of liberalism. And clearly Obamacare is the poster child for the failure of big government. But, you know, there used to be a day when the Republicans were the party of big ideas. We've got to get back to that. You know, there was a lot of hand-wringing after the 2012 election. You know, people saying, well, you know, what are we going to do to win the presidency again? And a lot of people in this town, Republican and Democrat alike, were saying, you know, we've got to just, you know, moderate our message. We've got to try to appeal to other people and do it by being more moderate. And what I've said was, you go back and show me a time where a Republican presidential candidate lost by being conservative. I can show you a lot of examples, especially the last two, where we had a Republican nominee that ran on a moderate message and got defeated, didn't inspire the base. 2 million fewer people who voted for John McCain didn't show up in the presidential election in 2012. And so when you look at what it takes to win presidential elections, you know, let's go back and look at the great communicator Ronald Reagan as our example, because you know, we still haven't had anybody that truly inspired people like him. The left still reviles Ronald Reagan to this day because of what he did to ignite a fire and really motivate and inspire people in this country. And he did it by talking about conservative principles and by implementing conservative principles. And they worked. They've worked every time they've been tried. We just don't try them enough. And so there are some people that are afraid to talk about those big ideas. They're afraid to put our principles on the table, and they think it's just enough to be against what those guys are against. I mean, you know, we're the party of big ideas. They're the party of big government. And there's a clear contrast. I mean, people are starting to realize that maybe never
this idea that,
you know, some people want to just sit back and play prevent defense and say, we don't want to be the issue. You know, and we've talked about this with our own leadership in the House. And I remember a year ago when I became chairman of the Republican Study Committee, I said, we ought to put together some of those big ideas, put them on paper. We ought to file an alternative to Obamacare. Not just be against it, absolutely continue to battle to repeal it, but we also ought to lay out side by side what conservative ideas would do to empower people, to put patients back in charge of their health care, to try to get some kind of semblance of a free market again. And so we got some of our smartest members, doctors, medical doctors, people in the healthcare industry, and we put together a true alternative to Obamacare. And the leadership at the time was saying, look, we don't want to do anything on Obamacare, just want to focus on how bad Obamacare is, but we don't want to put an alternative out there because, you know, then people will attack us. You know, what I said is if we can't, especially today, when people see how bad it is, if we can't put conservative ideas on paper and defend that against liberals, we don't deserve to be in this business.
Calling on the knees of war pigs crawling.
laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
The UN forces should have moved into Baghdad?
No.
Why not?
Because if we'd gone to Baghdad, we would have been all alone. There wouldn't have been anybody else with us. It would have been a U.S. occupation of Iraq. None of the Arab forces that were willing to fight with us in Kuwait were willing to invade Iraq. Once you got to Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it... the Syrians would like to have to the west, part of eastern Iraq, the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire if you go that far and try to take over Iraq. The other thing was casualties. Everyone was impressed with the fact that we were able to do our job with as few casualties as we had. But for the 146 Americans killed in action and for their families, it wasn't a cheap war. And the question for the president in terms of whether or not we went on to Baghdad and took additional casualties in an effort to get Saddam Hussein was how many additional dead Americans is Saddam worth? And our judgment was not very many, and I think we got it right.
Posted by Paul Waldman today, quote, "There is not a single person in America who has been more wrong and more shamelessly dishonest on the topic of Iraq than Dick Cheney. And now as the cascade of misery and death and chaos he did so much to unleash rages anew, Mr. Cheney has the unadulterated gall to come before the country and tell us that it's all someone else's fault. The suggestion then is that you caused this mess, Mr. Vice President. What say you?"
Well, obviously, I disagree. I think we went into Iraq for very good reasons. I think when we left office, we had a situation in Iraq that was very positive. We made major progress as a result of the decision President Bush made to go with a surge in 07 and 08. There had been a dramatic reduction in violence in the country. They were prepared for negotiations that would lead to a stay-behind force of American trainers, technical people, intelligence, logistics capability, so that the Iraqi armed forces would be able to defend their own territory. What happened was that Barack Obama came to office, and instead of negotiating a stay-behind agreement, he basically walked away from it. Not only did the combat forces leave, but all of the other forces left as well. Our generals had recommended a level of 20,000 to stay behind. The White House said no and cut it ultimately to 3,000, and frankly, that was inadequate to do the job. No agreement was ever reached. But the result was an Iraqi military that was unable to stand up to the terrorists when the ISIS came in from Syria a few days ago.
In your op-ed, you write as follows: "Rarely has a U.S. president been so wrong about so much at the expense of so many. But time and time again, history has proven that you got it wrong as well in Iraq, sir. You said there was no doubt Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. You said we would be greeted as liberators. You said the Iraq insurgency was in the last throes back in 2005. And you said that after our intervention, extremists would have to, quote, rethink their strategy of jihad. Now, with almost $1 trillion spent there, with 4,500 American lives lost there, what do you say to those who say you were so wrong about so much at the expense of so many?"
No, I just fundamentally disagree, Megan. You've got to go back and look at the track record. We inherited a situation where there was no doubt in anybody's mind about the extent of Saddam's involvement in weapons of mass destruction. We had a situation where if we, after 9/11, we were concerned about a follow-on attack that would involve not just airline tickets and box cutters as the weapons, but rather something far deadlier, perhaps even a nuclear weapon. Saddam Hussein had a track record that nearly everybody agreed to. We had an overwhelming vote of approval from the Congress, more votes for the action than we'd had in Desert Storm some 10 years before. Bill Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, numerous others spoke to the difficulties of the intelligence that all of us saw with respect to the threat that Saddam Hussein represented. It would have been irresponsible for us not to act. We did do the right thing, and I think the troops performed magnificently, and now we're in a situation where what Liz and I posted in our op-ed this morning is it's not just Iraq, but it's a whole pattern of behavior over the last 6 years that has refused to recognize that there is a war on terror, that we've got to move very aggressively to be able to deal with that. And this administration has repeatedly demonstrated that they don't believe it. Barack Obama has stated repeatedly the terrorist threat's gone. We got bin Laden. That's clearly not the true case. That's not the truth. And in fact, we have a situation tonight where terrorism is potentially in charge of a larger part of the Middle East than ever before in our history.
You mentioned that the status of forces agreement, and President Obama has taken a lot of heat for not negotiating that with Maliki. However, critics point out that it was President Bush who did sign the deal that said we'd get all U.S. forces out of there by the end of 2011.
With a status forces agreement for a stay behind force.
And when the president, our current president, sought to renegotiate that, al-Maliki didn't want it. That's what the president's defenders say, that he tried, he wanted to keep some stay-behind forces that would protect the gains our troops had made, but Maliki made it too tough.
No, that's not quite accurate, Megan. What happened was our generals recommended a stay-behind force from 14,000 to 18,000. The White House rejected it. So the military came back with a recommendation of 10,000. The White House rejected it. They took it all the way down to 3,000. I think by the time they got to that level, the Iraqis looked at it and believed that we weren't serious, that Obama was absolutely committed to completely withdraw from Iraq, and they were unable to come to an agreement, but I think in part because the Iraqis didn't think he really wanted one, and he certainly didn't push it. We have agreements like that with 40 nations around the world. They should have been able to come to an agreement with the Iraqis. And I think that failure to do so is what has precipitated the current crisis.
You know, there's no question.
It's the culmination of a policy that's gone on for 6 years now, and he has not been willing to step forward and have the United States play a significant role in the world.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because despite the fact that the Iraq War was so controversial and some of the items, in part because of the things we've been discussing, when the president came into office, President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden came into office, the vice president was celebratory about the situation in Iraq and said that it may be one of their greatest successes. That's how he described it in 2010, that Iraq could be one of the Obama administration's greatest
successes. Much more successes. Is Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Senator, how are you?
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me.
You agree with what the former vice president said there?
Well, you know, I think he has a point. I think that the Obama administration has tried to downplay that it's an ongoing threat of terrorism. They recently said that the five Taliban they released are no threat to Americans. So I would agree in that sense. Where he and I may part ways is that I think in some ways terrorism is worse because there is a chaotic vacuum in Iraq that came out of the Iraq War. And so I think really the Middle East is less stable since the Iraq War, that really when we had before the Iraq War, you had somewhat of a standoff between the Sunnis in Iraq and the Shiites in Iran. Now I think Iran is somewhat emboldened, and with a vacuum in Iraq, everybody's sort of flowing into these vacuums.
Senator, let me just disagree with you, because we know that the surge worked. There was stability. Violence was down to a lower point than even before the war started. Democracy, imperfect, but it was certainly an ally of the United States of America. The person that pulled out is the president. And George Bush warned about it. He said you can't pull out too early. You've got to provide intelligence. You've got to provide training. And if we continue to do that, the stability will remain.
But the one argument I would make on the other side is that the Iraqi government, Maliki, said no to U.S. forces. The other thing I would say is that ultimately for a country to survive, they have to want to survive and they have to be willing to put their lives on the line. The fact that they ran to the tune of thousands of soldiers running, I just can't see put American GIs in to defend Mosul when the Iraqis won't fight for Mosul.
You're kind of forgetting the fact that this is a decision the president made. As soon as the Americans left, literally their intelligence was shut off, and that's where their battle against the insurgency began. If they had good intelligence, the Iraqis were doing the fighting themselves at that point. And at that point, America just cut and run, right. I think, before they got the job done. You don't agree with that?
What I would say is that Maliki has been an ineffectual leader, and by creating a solely Shiite government, Shiite soldiers into Mosul, and so when push came to shove, the Shiite soldiers ran because they were in a predominantly Sunni area.
But
so
was it
really
wrong?
Maliki has been an ineffective leader, and Maliki was the one who said he didn't want U.S.
But that wasn't
troops.
My question.
We couldn't
say. Because I would argue that the president was so married politically to the idea that he was going to pull our troops out, regardless of the timing, that resulted in the loss of all the gains and all the sacrifice we had before. You don't agree with that?
Well, I would go back one step further and say that the whole chaos of the whole region came out of the Iraq War, that before the Iraq War, there was actually more stability than there is now. I would also say that where I really blame the president is that the president has been arming radical Islamic rebels in Syria, and part of this fighting force has been allied with the people we're arming in Syria. And so there are great contradictions that abound, Sean.
Let me ask you this. All right, so moving forward.
It is hard for me to imagine American soldiers fighting alongside Iranian soldiers in Iraq.
No, that's John Kerry madness, in my view. Here's the question. If Rand Paul were president of the United States, what would Rand Paul do right now? Would you allow airstrikes? Would you send in soldiers? The president said today 300 people, et cetera. Would you support that?
I would follow the Constitution, and the Constitution says that Congress should vote on going to war and that there should be congressional authorization.
What would you urge?
I don't agree that
a 10-year-old
authorization is sufficient.
I agree with that, too.
I agree with the American people.
What would you want to
do,
though?
People,
what would you ask for if you were president?
I would in no way, shape, or form put American troops into that mess because I do not want American troops fighting alongside
Iranian
troops.
Airstrikes?
Airstrikes, I have not ruled out completely. What I would say to airstrikes is that they're a form of war, and if we are going to get in the middle, we have to know what are we going to be doing, what is goal, and that Congress should vote on it.
When a problem comes along, you must whip it. Before the cream sets out too long, you must whip it. When something's going wrong, you must whip it. Now whip it into shape. Shape it up.
Crack that whip. As the Rhinos keep playing his turnism by moving the number three squish to the number two slot, it appears as though the most conservative of three squishes gained the House majority whip position. Conservatives could have and should have done better. But the Rhino establishment at the top of the right wing of the national duopoly hasn't learned a single lesson. It appears that the demise of the conservative libertarianish movement styled as the Tea Party is greatly exaggerated, and the loosening of the establishment's stranglehold isn't quite as loose as would first appear. Make them regret it and whip it. Whip it good. Dave Brath's upset of the former number two squish frightened the Rhinos, but they aren't giving up so easily. More pressure needs to be exerted in the rest of the primary season. This Tuesday, the 24th, we've got Colorado, Maryland, Oklahoma, New York, Utah, and the Mississippi runoff, with Chris McDaniel mounting a powerful challenge to Rhino Thad Cochran. We've also got Michigan, Tennessee, and Alaska coming up in August, so make sure you work real hard for Amash, Miller, and Carr. Right after the House, his turn next selections for majority leader and majority whip, Ted Cruz's deputy chief of staff, Paul Teller, started whipping them. Teller was executive director of the RSC, the Republican Study Committee, for over a dozen years, until he was fired by Chairman Scalise, now House Whip, for working with, quote, outside conservative groups. Teller invited certain House Republicans who are conservative in fact and not merely in rhetoric and appearance to an off-campus powwow this coming primary Tuesday evening to meet with Ted Cruz. It appears that if the GOP doesn't want conservative leadership, conservatives will find it elsewhere. Whip it. While it can be argued that the chairman of the Republican Study Committee is more conservative than the former whip, we've seen no evidence that the neocon foreign policy establishment has relinquished or even abated its grip on both parties. The current imperial executive dithers and projects weakness, arming, funding, and training jihadis on the one hand and capitulating on the other. When you project weakness, you invite conflict. What is the neocon Republican solution to this? Reinvade Iraq, escalate destabilization in the Middle East, edge us closer to regional or global conflict, this time against Russia and China, while blaming it all on Obama, as Obama blames it all on Bush, which really means Cheney. You're being played. They're whipping you. What will it take for you to whip them back? We can neither afford nor do we want another Middle Eastern war that will cost lives, both the lives of those poor people who suffer wherever we invade, as well as the lives of our fine young men and women in uniform. It isn't that we should shy away from war, rather that we should embrace it fully and swiftly when it is just, necessary, and has direct American interests. A futile attempt to salvage the blood and treasure already sacrificed to topple a secular Arab regime and embolden jihadis is not only stupid, but unaffordable. As our debt piles up, the Fed eases money like a bloated greased pig down a narrow rabbit hole, and we suffer at home under an absolutist kleptocracy come ineptocracy. In the meantime, a locust horde is spilling across our southern border. The IRS is targeting political opponents and apparently losing emails. The executive releases jihadis left and right, abandons our warriors in Mexico, and leaves them languishing in a corrupt, inept, and overpriced VA system, which is just foreshadowing the next assault by his Obamacare healthcare insurance slash takeover. And the broke blunderer of Benghazi goes on a book tour to set up the next neocon versus neocon kabuki theater. She was even on Fox Noise being interviewed during the neocon hour with Brett Baer by Brett and Greta Van Susteren. And the crazy thing is that the regular neocons like Charles Krauthammer and Billy Crystal, they weren't there. But since Hillary was, you couldn't really tell the difference. It can be overwhelming. It can seem unstoppable, but it doesn't have to be. Instead of swinging at every issue the corporatist media jams to distract you, train your efforts on those targets you can actually change. Increase the ranks of the conservative grassroots, send support for those fighting the real battles at all levels of government, and wake up the sleeping giant that stood once as a sentinel of liberty. Stand in defense of liberty and the Constitution, your own, your neighbors, and the rest of the world. Don't get whipped, but whip it good. You have a choice. Work hard now. We still are in the middle of the primary season. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and libertarianish conservatives take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, neocons, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Devo, broadcasting to you from Whiplash Central, the Imperial City. Doctor?
Doctor! And this is Trog, deep within my cave, somewhere in the Cascade Mountains. I'm afraid to open my mouth. You know, I, as your clip played, you know, I just had these flashes of things, and I was reading an article from Zero Hedge that I posted right before, the show, talking about the Iraqi Air Force is like nil, you know, and the ISIL, actually is what it is, got a whole bunch of American aircraft. Of course, they got that great deal on Toyotas. That was pretty cool. But, and I keep thinking about, you know, we listening to Cheney, I'm surprised he had the balls to, you know, come back into public, but when you got, you know, neocon Fox News wanting to give you a platform, you know, and Sean Hannity treating you like the king of Arabia, you know, what the hell, you know, I guess you can do it. It's very frustrating to me I'm really having troubles with this, Rex. It's really frustrating to me to have to discuss Republicans every damn week because they're a bunch of frickin' idiots. I know there's some great guys out there, and they're trying, and they really are. And obviously they have really stirred the pot. Otherwise, you know, less than a dozen people wouldn't get the attention they get or the attacks they get from both the Democrats and the Republicans, and the media, you know, focus and everything else. And I just it's just frustrating as hell to me to think that people sat on their asses and did nothing, and we. And basically the same war, Bush era, you know, war on the world, world hegemony, you know, blowing up women and children for democracy so we can save women and children, you know, destroying countries with the guise that we're going to stabilize countries. And we turn around and put those pricks right back in power. And I think... You know, we've had this conversation a lot, but I think that I don't know what else to say to people. You know, if you do not understand, for one, it's very easy for you and I, because I've never, you know, I've always been a conservative. I've always been, you know, God and country and Bill of Rights and leave me alone and what the hell is the federal government controlling everything for? You know, I mean, I was a basic American as far as I was concerned. You know, leave me alone. I'll leave you alone, cross the line, you know, and you get thumped and everything's good and we can be friends afterwards, you know, if you can handle it. You know, I mean, it's pretty simple. But to see the corruption, now, the guy in the first part of your, I came on just a little bit late, but the guy that made all the common sense, who was that in the first part of the clip?
The first part of the clip? That was actually Steve Scalise. That was Steve Scalise, the current whip, who was the most conservative of three choices, but you know, and they're labeling him a Tea Party favorite, but he's kind of squishy.
A Tea Party favorite. He has a 76%, but he had some good points. Okay, I didn't know who was speaking. I was just listening to the verbiage, and I have been saying for over 2 years, not that I really ever wanted to say it, not that I thought anybody would ever listen to it, not that I thought anybody would ever give a crap. It was just something that I coined way back in the primary, before I even knew it was obvious that no matter what anybody did, Romney was going to be, you know, steal the primary. But I said way back then, I go, you know, you guys can focus on this, Obama that crap all you want, but here's the bottom line. If you put the same people back in power, the Bush-era rhinos that launched wars all over the world, that raised our debt ceiling five times, trillions of dollars, that set records and all those things, that screwed it up so bad that the whole nation wiped out the House and the Senate and the presidency and handed it to the Democrats, if you keep those people in power, then nothing changes. No matter how much they whine, no matter how much in the primaries all of a sudden they find God and they blow the dust off the, you know, Constitution and read it again and go, oh, hell, yeah, that's a document. Yeah, I've read that, you know, and try to convince that their constituents that they're not Democrats. You know, no matter how much they do any of this, these people helped destroy our position in the world, and I don't care what anybody says about Iraq. My son was there a long time. We discussed this extensively about, you know, the money we spent, you know, training these people after we blew their damn country up and trying to get these guys to take care of themselves. You know, when he came out the second tour, he said, it ain't going to happen. If it goes to hell, these people ain't going to stand up for themselves. You know, I mean, he was there training them. And so, you know, it's just the whole thing is a lie. It was based on lies. It was lie. They didn't topple the country fast enough. Then they had the surge. Then they spent billions. Then they spent trillions. And when people talk about $1 trillion war, it wasn't $1 trillion war, folks. You know, we have $5 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet, and we have a $17+ trillion debt. Nothing was a trillion. It is what it is today. We are still paying the price for this stuff. And it isn't that, and I've said this before, I am not an anti-war person at all. I'm just an anti-bullshit person. You know, you got a serious concern with a country, and it is a real threat to world peace or their neighbors or whatever. I get it. You know, you go take care of business, but you don't play these games, and then you don't fund frickin' so-called moderates, bull crap, you know, what a lie that is, and build a new army, you know, of super jihads, you know, on steroids, holy crap, you know. I mean, God, they got matching tennis shoes and Toyotas and black outfits, and, hey, they look badass, you know. And, you know, they're kind of hip, you know. And then you don't build these armies claiming that you're financing and arming, you know, moderates, because Assad's got to go. And I still never had anybody ever explain to me why Assad has to go. I know why, but nobody has a, you know, who in the hell is he attacking? You know what I mean? What the hell has he done? You know, it's just amazing to me. These are the people, when you re-elected Cornyn in Texas, which just blows me away, but whatever. You know, Texas is pretty conservative, but doesn't mean they're always right. When you reelect Boehner, when you reelect Graham, when you reelect, who was the other one, Ryan, any of these guys that come out of that, you know, that war zone of Bush era, you know, the debt ceiling increases, no child left behind, expand federal government, act like Democrats while we're here, and you put these people back in power, and then you don't fight to get them out of leadership positions in the House and Senate by picking up the phone and telling your representative that if you do not, you get somebody in there that has read the Constitution and understands it and will stand on it, that doesn't have...
Trog? Why can't I hear you? Okay. No problem. He dropped. He'll be back. But, yeah, he was making some really good points there. And I think that people have to understand something. And it's so easy to get rah, rah, rah about a war because the war mentality is kind of, you know, unite with your fellow countrymen and beat the other guys who are a danger to you. And that's actually a very important thing because if we are, in fact, invaded, oh, wait a minute, has anybody looked at our southern border? I'm pretty sure we're being invaded, but we're not doing anything about that, okay? But if you are being invaded, then you lock arms and you fight the enemy, okay? Now, you don't always have to have a border invasion. You know, for example, and no matter how you thread the needle about what the issues to start it and all that kind of stuff, nevertheless, the Nazis were on the march to take over all of Europe. And if you think for a second that once they secured all of Europe, they were going to leave us alone, highly unlikely. So sometimes you do go overseas to get into it with the real bad guys. But I don't know that Iraq is that much of a problem. Whether it was or wasn't back then, whether they lied, whether it was misinformation, whether they got the wrong intel, whatever, what's done is done. The simple fact is that it's falling apart now, and I would argue that we've already had a hand in that, because if you recall, Jihad Shaikh Mohammed ran over to Syria when we were trying to topple Assad, and he was talking about, I know the difference between the good guys and the bad guys. Well, the guys that the United States has been training and giving weapons to and was considering turning our military into the Air Force for, which is Al-Qaeda-like or at least sympathetic, is now the ISIS group that is, in fact, fighting against our interests in Iran, in Iraq. And so what do we do about it? Well, the whole point was that we were trying to contain Iran, and now we're asking Iran to come help save Baghdad from the guys that we trained and armed in Syria. I mean, just think about how chaotic this is. Now, is it some kind of sinister game of Risk where they're moving the chess pieces around? Maybe. Is it just blatant incompetence about not knowing who's who and what's what? Probably that too, you know. So the idea is that if you don't know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, and sometimes there are no good guys, there's just bad guys and worse guys, then if it isn't directly involving you, stay the frack out of it. Oh, but they attacked us on 9/11. Let's think about that. On September 11, 2001, 19 Saudis flew airplanes into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and one crash in a field in Pennsylvania. Not a single Iraqi was on that flight. Not a single Afghan was on that flight, okay? But Afghanistan, the Taliban there, were harboring Al-Qaeda, who was behind the operation, so you could justify that war back then. Other than protecting the poppy fields, I don't know why the hell we're there. now. So that makes no sense. But the simple fact is that, why didn't we invade Saudi Arabia? That would have probably been more the culprit than Iraq. So, think about what's going on here. Do you think for a second that it's possible that the various factions, not only the division between Shia and Sunni, but national divisions, tribal divisions, whatever, do you think that those factions might likely lie to the United States in order to get us to do the heavy lifting on their behalf? That's pretty much what the Saudis do. And for all you rah, 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 we got to do everything to defend Israel, it's not the 51st state of the United States, and don't think for a second that Israel doesn't meddle in our affairs as much as the Saudis do. They're all using us to leverage power against each other. It's not our concern. If they want to kill each other, let them kill each other. We don't want to get involved. We can't afford it money-wise. We can't afford it with our troops. We can't afford it in our standing in the world. And I think Trog's back to finish his point.
Yeah, don't you hate that when you talk for like 30 seconds to realize you're talking to yourself? But I should be used to that by now. Back to what I was saying about, and you just made some good points, and they are key points, because one of the things that you and I try to do, and I think we do it well, is we step back and we don't take sides so that we can look at things objectively. And you made some very key points. I just read an article. I came back inside and I read an article that Israel just struck 9 targets in Syria. Okay, now, a lot of people don't understand this, but that's an act of war. it all this stuff is going on. Everybody's pushing everybody's buttons. Everybody's claiming this and that and the other and the other. You get all the right wingers that are all, 110%, Israel walks on water and we must do everything in our power to make sure that, Israel never gets a speck of dust on it. That group, that they are the strongest anti-Iran people, and yet nobody ever talks about Saudi. And I've done, I don't know how many different, write-ups on Saudi Arabia. But I always want to, and I sometimes get into the mix of it with people, and they'll post some anti-Iran thing, and I'll go, do you have the same concerns about Saudi? Because it ain't any better either. Oh, but Saudi uses the U.S. petrodollar, so they're our friends. So it's okay if they do that shit. And that's the frustration about, and this is geopolitics and the Middle East politics, which is a really quagmire of the nth degree. But it really is internally impacting your country. What in the hell are we doing funding and arming really bad guys to invade Syria? And if anybody's ever done the research, it's really about pipelines. It ain't got nothing to do with human rights. It has nothing to do with dictatorships. We have no problem propping up dictatorships when they do what the hell they want. We want them to do for us. But if it's a dictator that isn't kissing our boots and allowing us to do what the hell we want in their country, then all of a sudden, it's the whole spreading democracy thing, and it's, oh, he's an abusive dictator. They all are. The whole freaking place is full of them, And you want to talk about human rights and pick a country over there. So this is the thing. You have to strip that veil off. When I hear somebody, I don't care if it's on the left or the right, but when I hear somebody say, Iran is so terrible, the first thing I go and I'm thinking, who funds you? And I'm talking about politicians. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't understand this, but a huge chunk of Fox News is owned by Saudi and Israel. And people don't take the time to do the research. And this parallels back to what I was saying before my phone died, is – it will never change until you wipe out as many of these people who have been in Congress through Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush, because some of those guys have been involved in all of it. Do you remember when we blew Yugoslavia to hell over human rights and destroyed that whole area and broke it up, ended up breaking up like 9 different, independent states, and they've just suffered ever since, over some bull crap about, somebody in human rights and, democracy. It was the same bullshit. It's the same pattern. I don't know why they do the insane shit they do. There's money in war. There's money in debt. There's money in rebuilding countries we blow up because we get our contractors in there. I mean, there's money in everything, so you can always track back to money. But the ideology behind it, while we preach to Americans that we're doing this for the good of the world, show me one place we've blown the shit out of or interrupted or toppled the government in the last 10, 15 years that is better off, you know? And I get this stuff from, you know, because I was never a Ron Paul guy, so to speak, but I've studied him, I've studied Newt, I've studied all of them, you know, and there's things I like and dislike in all of them because I have my own core concept about what I think is good for the country and what I think is destroying my country. But the biggest thing is destroying our country is not the corrupt politicians in power. It's the ignorant, lazy people who won't get off their butt and educate themselves and turn around and vote the same corrupt, evil bastards right back in power. Because you can vote them out. But if you don't do anything, you don't do the research, you don't get the, you know, the cloud off your eyes, you know, of okay, Fox told me who, okay, Putin's evil. Now, Putin's the evil guy now, so, okay, there's my new enemy. You know, most people have no idea about the history of Russia since the fall of the USSR. I don't even think Fox does. They don't give a shit. Somebody told them, we need the Cold War. We need to increase NATO. We need to increase military spending. And Russia's getting too powerful because they're trading with a lot of people, and they have a lot of natural resources. And, oh, my God, you know, they've grown $2 trillion in their economy in the last 15 years. Shit. Oh, my God, we can't have that. You know, you got to ask yourself, why is that person the enemy? And who is saying it? Why they are saying it? And then you go, okay, who backs this crooked politician? Who gives them their donations? Oh, okay, that makes sense while they're saying it. None of this is difficult, Rex. It seems like it's confusing, but it's not. When you skin it away, it's money, debt, banking, debt, war industry, and international corporations, and oil and gas companies and pipelines. It really doesn't get much more difficult than that. And almost all of the Middle East, everything, especially Syria, especially Iran, really doesn't have crap to do with Syria and Iran in the Middle East. It has to do with the fact that Russia is a major gas and oil exporter and supplier to Europe, and the U.S. can't have Russia and Europe getting along because they want to control everything. That's really what it boils down to. And when you do enough research, all of a sudden you wake up one day going, well, that's kind of slimy. Yeah, it is. And, you know, and Ron Paul, you know, everybody calls him an isolationist. They're starting to call Rand an isolationist. They're calling anybody who is not for blowing up the frickin' world for democracy an isolationist. And yet, I made a comment the other day. I don't remember what, you know, where I was interacting with some people on. I go, let me ask you a question. China isn't invading countries all over the world. Are they isolationists? And yet, I can count 25 new trade deals, including major investments in infrastructure, including they're going into Greece. Europe can't solve Greece's problem. America hasn't solved Greece's problem. So China goes in there and say, hey, we'll invest in bridges and energy and alternative energy, and we will, you know, lend money, and we will build a trade market and blah, blah, blah. And they're going to solve Greece's problem through trade and investment and infrastructure and deals. Now, is that an isolationist? Or does that sound like, God, that kind of sounds like what America used to be. Go places and say, you know what? We're not here to fix your problems. You're your own country. You know, we don't want our puppet in power. We want you to have true democracy, not U.S. puppet democracy. And we want to invest and bring our companies in, and we want to help your country grow and develop. We don't want to saddle you with debt from the IMF, which is a you know, the same problem that we have in America, these central banks. And that's what China's been doing all over the frickin' world. Now China's our enemy all of a sudden. Hell, they do what, $700 billion a year trade with America? We've got 30 to 40% of all the profits of American corporations are made overseas, most of that in China, and some, yes, in other countries too, but most of that in China. They carry massive amounts of our debt. They have over $3 trillion with a trade imbalance because we have to borrow money from them so we can buy their cheap shit. Because we're broke, and Americans want cheap crap at Walmart, you know, to wear the weirdest clothes they can wear on their bodies ever in the history of the world, so they can go shop at Walmart and buy cheap crap. And now, all of a sudden, we're getting this whole rhetoric that China's the enemy now. Well, how can they be our trade partner and the enemy? That anybody who threatens U.S. the U.S. empire, which really you think war when you think empire and military-industrial, but really it's banking. It's the trade dollar. It's the petrodollar. And there are countries that have grown up and they've matured, Russia, China, India, Brazil. They're expanding. While we've been blowing up the world and going in debt and destroying our economy, they've been expanding and trading and building bridges in other countries and building high-speed railroads across Central Asia to Germany is the new thing, including to Israel and all this stuff, and that threatens us? We have a serious foreign policy problem in this country. And unless people educate themselves, you will keep voting these neocon, warmongering assholes back into power over and over and over and over again, and our system, our economic system is going to crash, and we're going to end up in freaking a huge war, not with third world nations, but with countries big enough to freaking take a big bite out of us like Russia and China, because people are too stupid and too lazy to get off their ass and educate themselves on what the hell is going on around the world that impacts what's going on in this country, right down to the thing of what we, the key, supposed to be the core of this show is get rid of these corrupt Democrat infiltrator rhino creeps. Before they, do you think if they get the House and the Senate and the presidency with the same leadership in power today that was in power when Bush had 6 years of total control and about wiped us out and launched wars all over the world, five debt ceiling increases, do you really think that they're going to fix all the problems of this country? I don't. And maybe you do, and maybe that's where we part company. But I absolutely believe these people are not the solution to this country. Now, do I believe that there are people that could and should be? Yes, I do, but there's not enough of them, and they're not in leadership positions. And we just had the House do it to us again, and Boehner's still in there. How many debt ceiling increases? I mean, the guy, his number one thing he wants to work on is amnesty. Our country's falling apart, and that's what his focus is? You know what he reminds me of, Rex? And I know I'm going off. But you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Yeltsin. No, he reminds me of Yeltsin.
Yeltsin was more rose.
You know?
Less orange.
Yeah, but he was toasted. You know what I mean? And he just was a pushover. And he had a lot of power, and he didn't have a sober, sane moment in his life. And he basically sold Russia right down the drain. Russia lost trillions and trillions of dollars underneath him. And they just raped and pillaged and plundered Russia's natural resources, their industries, put them in debt up to their eyeballs. It took Putin, what, last 15, 20 years to clean Russia up, you know, after Yeltsin. And that's what Boehner reminds me of, that kind of just absolute ineptitude. And you guys, put him back, Ohio, put him back, voted for him, and then last time when you and I were fighting like hell to get rid of this guy, get a new speaker. And people wouldn't do it. I don't know how many people made calls. I really don't, because I don't track it. I just hope people do. But I don't think people are, Rex. And I don't know why. Oh, it just doesn't matter, you know, because, you know, it's so corrupt anyway. You know, that's a freaking loser's freaking attitude. Your country's falling apart. You have to do something. You know what I mean? Posting Obama this, Obama that, all day, every day on Facebook is not doing something. All you are is a free newspaper delivery person for Fox News. That's what you are. You're an unpaid newspaper deliverer. You know, that's his whole rhetoric is Obama, 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 Obama. You don't understand the problem of our country if all you can think about and speak about every day is Obama. He's one man, and he doesn't control the government. People control him. They're the same people control him that control Bush, that control Clinton, and the Bush before them. Those are the unspoken power structures in this in Washington, D.C., and you live in that hellhole, so you know more about this than I do. But I get it, and you have to stand up and go, it's my country, I want it back, I want sanity in my foreign policy, you know, and I want them to quit spending us into debt, we can never pay the debt back in this country, which means massive inflation or massive war or both, because that's how the neocon, neoliberal commies that run our country and our banking systems, how they solve financial problems and more taxes. That's what's coming down the road for you. And if you don't stand up and do something, then it's a guarantee. The pathway is crystal clear to anybody who studies economics or foreign policy. With that, that was a rant. Back to you.
Back to me? I thought you were just going to do the rest of the show. I'll just fill in the gaps when your phone dies. I'm just kidding. next time your phone's going to die, let me know in advance.
Yeah, right.
Those are all valid points, and we probably need to clear up a couple of things. But let's do some housekeeping because we're almost in the second hour, and I got a 15-minute econ war clip I want to get to. We want to first of all thank everybody for listening and for sharing the show and getting it out there. Remember that Trog and I do this. It costs us money to do this, and we have no advertising on the show so that we can bring you clips. Some of them, unfortunately, also come from Flux Noise, but that's because they actually allow the conservatives on. And then, of course, once they leave, they bring on the neocon panel to shred them when they can't defend themselves. So we try to put that in context for you. But, you know, we'll troll MSLSD and CNN and all the other crap just to find you the nuggets and tie it all in together. So to do that, we run no commercials, and it costs us money. So you are the only reason anybody knows that this show exists. So when you see it on Facebook, and our page on Facebook is Liberty's Thunder, make sure you like the page, interact with the page, otherwise Facebook hides us from you. And join Chris's group, Liberty's Talk, if you want to get to the in-depth information and articles, which put all the stuff you just basically talked about in context. Make sure you do that. If you see it on Twitter, tweet it out. But nothing works better than a personal invitation. So just tell somebody that the show is on, they should come listen. Now, here's the thing. People, you know, sometimes might get a little offended at our colorful metaphors. Well, we're talking about politics, so words do tend to fly. And sometimes even the F-bomb, even though I've been trying to minimize that, sometimes when I'm talking about Boehner off the cuff, it just happens. But you don't have to agree with everything we say. You don't have to like every perspective we have. The issue here is to have a different perspective, and that's kind of the point of conservatism, is conservatives are diverse. We have a set of principles, not an ideology. We have a set of principles about how the world works, and therefore we have different positions that we apply those principles to vis-a-vis practical policy and application. That's healthy. On the other side, they're a monolith. They're a hive mind. They only have one position. And, of course, they present it to you in two ways, the left flavor and the right flavor. The left flavor is blue and is a jackass, and the right flavor is red and is a pachyderm. Other than that, they pretty much are feeding you the same crap. So please share the show, and you can listen to any of our shows anytime just by going to Blog Talk Radio, searching out Liberty's Thunder, and the shows are listed right there. You just click on the title, and it opens up a hyperlink, and it plays right in your browser free of charge. You may have to listen to a brief 30-second commercial or something like that. And if you go below the scrolling graphics and you click the download button, right-click on that, you will get an MP3, which you can listen to your MP3-enabled device, burn a CD, take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Tea Party meetings, your Republican Party meetings, your AA meetings, whatever, get it out there. The important thing is to get people to start thinking about the Constitution, to start getting along. See, one of the things about conservatives is because we are independent-minded, and that's conservatives and libertarian ish conservatives. Trog was, I think, slaying a rhino. But the one thing about it is that we are independent. We are individuals. We have our own way of looking at things. And that sometimes gets us to have severe conflicts about issues, which is healthy. Here's the problem, though. When you take that conflict and you turn it into a grudge, and start infighting with each other when you in large part agree, you create room for the other side to coalesce because they're a hive mind and win. That's what happened in South Carolina. Okay, you had six opponents to Miss Lindsey Graham, and even though that's healthy, we should have competition, as long as they were able to prevent her from getting 50%, there would have been a runoff between her and Lee Bright. But it didn't happen. Not enough people got motivated. And that division opened up the road for Lindsey Graham to get back in there. On the other hand, in Virginia's 7th district, the grassroots got together. Traditional conservative Republicans, Christian Republicans, libertarians, Campaign for Liberty, Tea Party. And when I say Tea Party, they were local Tea Party, not these, you know, big name groups. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying that it was local Tea Party, local grassroots, local Campaign for Liberty, local Ron Paul people worked together and beat the hell out of little Eric Cantona, which sent shockwaves through the establishment. And that's why we had the election last Thursday in the House. And of course, they won't give us the numbers, but Raul Labrador was challenging the number three squish, McCarthy, for majority leader. Well, obviously the Republicans weren't scared enough. They played his turnism, and they moved up their number three squish to the number two position. And then you had a race between three squishes for majority whip. Now, if you don't know what a whip is basically the member of the majority that, or, you know, the party, that runs around and whips up the votes. So when you got, like, an issue like amnesty, for example, and you want to go out there and get the votes, the whip's job is to go there and whip them up so that the caucus has enough to put forward. There used to be something the Republicans did called the Hastert rule, which is that if the majority of your own caucus, your own party, isn't behind a piece of legislation, you don't even bring it to the floor. Well, since there's been a conservative coup going on in the House, Boehner has violated that, so watch him to keep doing that. Now he's got Scalise. Now, of the three, Scalise is the most conservative, but he's not really conservative. You heard him in the opening clip. Chris commented on it. He did sound sober. A lot of them sound sober. Paul Ryan sometimes sounds sober, especially when it comes to entitlement reform. John Boehner sounds sober, especially when he's talking like pro-life. So that's not really the point. They can sound conservative. Mitch McConnell can sound conservative. Even Lindsey Graham. That's not the point. Are they going to follow through on the rhetoric? That's the key. And these guys typically don't, and that is the problem. So now we've got three guys. Have we made it more conservative? I don't know, because Boehner's still there, which is just an embarrassment, and if you play your cards right in the rest of the primaries, hopefully he won't be there come January. Then you move McCarthy up to Cantor's slot. Well, believe it or not, McCarthy is more of a squish than Cantor. So as bad as Cantor was, you've now actually gone with the majority leader position in the opposite direction. You've gone more left. You've gone more Rhino. And then Scalise, arguably, is more conservative than McCarthy, but, you know, the Republican Study Committee was established as the conservative voice way back when. Now it's kind of become the chic thing for those who call themselves conservatives to do, which is precisely why the real conservatives, the real Tea Party slash Libertarian wing of the party had to form their own caucus, the Liberty Caucus. And that's where most of the real conservatives, the real constitutionalists are. So is it messy? Yeah, it usually is. The fact that we've got essentially a two-party duopoly lock means that the various factions that would otherwise probably be other parties are within the tent. The problem is that the leadership, the money, the control is all Rhino, all neocon, all the time. And that's what we have to fix. That's what we have to change. And it isn't going to happen quickly, but you better bet that if it doesn't happen soon, this dead elephant shall remain dead, and the donkey is going to ruin your life. Period. End of story. That's as simple as you can make it. So get busy. And we're in the second hour now. Call the number 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. You got a 15-minute clip here that we're going to get to shortly that has some economic finance stuff, because that's pretty important, and that's generally an issue that if you can explain it to people, you can actually build consensus and bring them to our side, fighting for the Constitution, fighting for sound money, maximum liberty. So that's pretty important. It ties in with this whole Iraq mess. Now, some of the divisions that occur out there that you really got to think about, especially with these upcoming primaries. I mean, we got the runoff, McDaniel and Cochran, this Tuesday. That's a really important one. Get on the phone. Make some calls. Go to the website. See if you can get in touch with them. Make some calls Monday, tomorrow, and see if you can convince some people to just give a real conservative a chance instead of an old bull who is just going to feed them more bull. They sound conservative. They pretend they're conservative. And most people just run on name recognition and the ignorance of people who say, well, I don't want any of these, you know, revolutionary, legislative, arsonist, extremists taking over the party. Well, look at McDaniel's record. He's not psychotic. He's not crazy. He's just a constitutionalist. Sometimes people fear that. But the fact is that that is what made us great, and that is the only thing that's going to keep us great, or at least get us back to it. Without that, we're just another central bank-run country with a big military and a declining culture, and our place in the world is going to disappear. You know, Chris was talking about the Chinese doing things through trade. I don't know. I don't trust the Chinese. They're still communists. Yes, they're employing market reforms and all that kind of stuff and making trade deals. Trade deals should be made with the individual companies and individual people. You know, I want to outcompete them. I want to beat them all over the place in economic competition, not in monetary manipulation, not in pointing guns at everybody and toppling governments and doing regime change, but I also want a military that can put theirs to shame at a heartbeat so that no one ever wants to pick a fight with us. But right now our military is being used as a mercenary force on behalf of the foreign interests that control our foreign policy establishment. And that includes Saudi Arabia, which is the, forgive the pun, the Mecca of Sunni Islam, which includes Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all these other terrorist groups. And, you know, also Israel. Oh, Rex, you can't talk bad about Israel. It's the 51st state of the United States. No, it isn't. It is a foreign country in the Middle East. Is it the best country in the Middle East? Probably. Is it run more freely and better than any others? Most likely. So what? That's their business. That's their business. And they have nukes. They have the most capable air force. They have a phenomenally capable ground force. So if someone's going to threaten them, they can kick ass. They usually don't because they're interfering with our foreign policy over here, and we're shipping money over there and sending strings with it to benefit us and hamper them. Let them figure it out. It's their neighborhood. It's not our neighborhood. We don't know who the good guys are. We don't know who the bad guys are. We don't know who the worst guys are, which is why we shouldn't be involved. You never involve yourself militarily if you think you're going to do more harm than good. And if you look at our record, we've done more harm to others and ourselves than good. Is that isolationism? I don't think so. We look pretty friggin' isolated now. Remember, Obama was supposed to fix the problems of the Bush-Cheney administration and restore our standing in the world? All he's done is project weakness and create more chaos. And the neocons love it. They love to blame him for it because he hasn't done enough. Really? He hasn't funded enough terrorists. He hasn't blown up enough buildings. He hasn't droned enough people. Well, that's probably true. Had you elected Mitt Romney, I guarantee you that more of that would be going on. But that's neither here nor there. That's comparing shit to dog shit. It's still shit. That's not the point. The point is that you want somebody who is going to defend our country and defend our interests and leave everybody else the hell alone. Outcompete them, invent more stuff, make more goods, have them buy from you. That's the way we want to do it. We wouldn't be isolated. America wasn't isolated because we didn't go to war all over the place. We were welcomed everywhere because we made the stuff people wanted. We made all the gadgets and technological advancements and medicine advancements that everybody wanted. We can do that again, but we need liberty, private property, sound money, and to stop pissing away our blood and treasure, screwing around in other people's backyards where we don't know who's who and what's what. And it's really just that simple. At 11 o'clock, if you're listening live, you're going to get cut off if you're listening in your browser, and the only way you can continue to listen, and I've got a Ron Paul closing clip, which I think is pretty important, is to call in and listen on your handset. The call-in number is 646 649-1013. If you're listening on the Internet or podcast, just keep going, and we'll probably wrap up shortly after midnight. Chris, you want to add anything to that before we go to Schiff? Chris?
Okay. Oh, there you you unmuted me. Yeah, you had me muted.
I was, well, it sounded like you were slaughtering a rhino while I was talking.
I was beating a heavy bag. I was so pissed. Anyway, here's what's going on. There's no way that foreign policy is going to succeed if your economics is in the tank. And if your economics being in the tank causes you to interfere with other countries and cause wars, then you're going to fail again. One of the things that if you study and some of the great minds on this empire concept, especially, you know, the new American century and these crazy neocons that are trying to recreate the Third Reich or Rome or whatever the hell their insane crap is that it was we had an opportunity and they ran with it because we were the sole superpower when Russia fell and China was just a shadow of itself. And even some of the neocons said that this plan is only going to work so long until other superpowers rise up. Well, you have an equalizing of a multipolar world again, and the neocons are freaking the hell out. The reason they're freaking out is because they have this insane vision that we're going to be able to control the whole world and manipulate everything at will. And you know, we have 800 bases around the world, and you heard Cheney bragging about the fact we got all these, you know, agreements with all these countries, you know, these service agreements for military, blah, 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 blah. Most people don't even know what AFRICOM is. They probably think it's, you know, like a new dance, but it's a whole new military, you know, group that was put together. You know, the U.S. has quietly expanded into 45 countries in Africa. While you were busy worrying about whatever you were worrying about, American Idol, who knows. And this is not going to stop until we're in a huge war or until our economy crashes. And does it affect you? You damn right it affects you because we don't have the money. And I love what Peter Schiff said, and it's maybe even on this clip that you're getting ready to play, but he said, we had to borrow the money to go to war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, what are we going to do? Borrow the money to go do it again? We have no money, folks. We're broke. We're in debt. Our true total debt is somewhere between $80 and $110 trillion. Nobody even really knows for sure. Unfunded liabilities. We will never pay it back, which means sooner or later, someday, somehow, the currency system will have to crash and be rebuilt. And when it's rebuilt and the world races away from the dollar, which they raced to in 2008 because we were supposedly the same economic stability of the world, and we've proven that, number one, we caused a crash. Number two, you know, the last 6 years has shown that we will do nothing to repair our broken system that caused the problem. And so more and more countries, China, Russia, India, Brazil, BRICS, all these countries, even all the new trade deals between China and Germany and Greece and everything else that's going on around the world that most people don't even pay attention to, are being cut outside the U.S. trade dollar. The only reason we've been able to do what we've done is because the world uses the U.S. dollar for petro exchange, and they've used the dollar for trade dollars. So in other words, if I'm in Russia building Ford cars, I would have to convert to U.S. money and then back to, you know, German money so I could buy the parts I needed to convert back to U.S., to convert back to rubles. So the U.S. dollar was always in the middle of the mix. Well, when you have trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars out there, and there's always that transition, you know, between currencies, there's hundreds of billions of dollars made every day on that. And that's what has kept our corrupt, crooked, evil, worthless pieces of crap politicians able to continue to spend like whores, you know, for whatever side. I don't care what party it is. They both have the same problem, you know, bribing their constituencies, their lobbyists, their corporate, their unions, whoever. It's both of them are bad. And that's the only thing that's allowed this to go on. Now, when the world moves away from the dollar, which it's already doing, and when it happens in a rapid pace, the U.S. will be isolated to its dollar, and it will no longer be able to maintain this $3.6 to $4 trillion federal budget. It won't be able to maintain all of it. It'll trickle down to your states, to your county, to your home, to your paycheck. It is going to be hell on earth, and it is coming. And if you study economics, you will understand it's coming sooner or later. And the question is, how do we respond to it? And if you have the same bastards in power who got us into this mess, who have abused the Constitution, abused you as a citizen, abused the government power, run us into debt, use the Fed, you know, to print up $5 trillion on the balance sheet before Obama's out, it'd probably be $7 trillion. If you keep voting these people in power, they're the ones that are going to be in power when this correction comes. And that is going to affect you. So you really need to get educated and get involved, because you're involved whether you like it or not. Period. Play the clip there, buddy.
Yeah. Whether you like it or not, I'm going to play the clip. And whether you like it or not, you better get involved, because if you think, oh, I don't know. I mean, I can't get along with those Christian conservatives. They're all uptight, and all they care about is pro-life this and pro-life that. Well, what is your issue? Well, I think that we should, legalize pot. Really? That's your issue? I mean, look, we can have an interesting debate about legalization versus war on drugs versus decriminalization. I think decriminalization is probably a good idea. I don't think anybody should be smoking too much dope, because guess what? The dumber you are and the more you're concerned about playing video games and running around at midnight to satisfy your munchies, the less likely you are to be an effective citizen, and therefore you're going to be ruled by the New World Order. But that's fine. We can have that conversation. Either way, pot smoking, even hemp, which I can't for the life of me figure out why it's illegal, okay? These are important things, but they are like number 300 and 301 on the list. Number one at the top of the list is quit pissing people off and arming the wrong guys who want to kill you all over the world. End the Federal Reserve. Wipe out the IRS. These are important things. You know, sodomite marriage, pot smoking, and all that other stuff, it's not the number one issue. We can have a conversation about that, but if that's what's going to get you to divide with everybody else, you're screwed. Let's get a couple of things straight. Number one, alternate parties cannot win. It sucks. It's wrong. It's not the way the system is supposed to be. Independent candidates or alternate parties to the two in the duopoly should be on the ballots. They should be available to vote. But that's just not the way that it is. That's the reality. It sucks. Fix it. Get in touch with your elections commission. Start working on ballot rules. Get rid of the machines. Go to write-in ballots. All that kind of stuff. You can do it. But you have to do that on a local and state level. In the meantime, you got two choices. The right wing and the left wing of the national duopoly. Well, the left wing is gone. And the only person that you had over there that had any semblance of possibly doing something in the right direction was Dennis Kucinich, and he was a little crazy, and now he's gone. So the idea is that you go support the team that has some sensible people in it. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Justin Amash, Trey Gowdy, Louis Gohmert, Raul Labrador. These are the people you want to get behind. Now, does that mean that they're great? No, and it doesn't mean that you could trust them either. But nitpicking on the little things that they do wrong, while the other guys are running roughshod over your Constitution, your money, and destroying the world in your name, that's where you really need to get your head in the game. So what you have to do is work for that. Work together and understand something. There is no way a Republican on a national stage, locally, each state, you got to know your game, know what's going on in there, but on a national ticket, whether president, senator, or congressman, or whatever, there's no way a Republican, a real Republican, is going to win without carrying what is still the largest voting bloc on the base, Christian conservatives. That is a fact. If you have not merely a tepid pro-life person, but if you have somebody who is pro-abortion or possibly even pro, sodomite marriage, you're going to lose the Christians, and no matter how fervent you are, the guy's not going to win. Now, you might be for those things. You might think that any two people, no matter what sex they are, three people or a person and a dog or whatever, can get married. Let's have that conversation. But right now, if you let that issue divide everything, forget about ending the Fed, forget about ending the wars, forget about ending the taxation, the illegal income taxation, not going to happen. And for you Christian voters out there, where pro-life is your number one issue, you've been electing pro-life Republicans for 40 friggin' years, and babies are still being killed. Do you think maybe after four decades you'll figure out that they're not going to fix a problem that is cultural for you? Maybe you need to get off your lazy ass instead of hiding in your friggin' church and convince people and persuade people to not kill their babies. Did you ever think of doing that instead of trying to hire Rick Santorum or John Boehner to do it for you? You are supposed to be doers of the word, not just hearers. So quit yipping in your churches and listening to some insipid shitbag pastor pretending to be a Christian and telling you that we have to go kill Iraqis in order to save the world. Give me a freaking break. Our invasion of Iraq and Syria has cost more Christian lives than anybody, a single Muslim in the Middle East. That's the problem. So you're not going to win elections for pro-life or any of these other causes that are important to you if you don't start embracing those younger, not exactly looking the way that you look, they don't wear khaki pants and blue blazers and walk around like they got a stick up their ass, but these kids, and a lot of them are in their 40s, okay, are about liberty, and Christians are about liberty. Now, do they want to smoke pot? Probably. So what? So what? Your job is to convince them that that's probably not healthy for them. But kids do stupid things, and then they get a job, and then they get some kids of their own, and then they grow up, and they stop doing some of those stupid things. You know, so you have to learn to prioritize and get the issues straight. And one of the biggest issues, apart from this rhino neocon leadership trying to blow up the world in your name, killing people unjustly, making us less secure and more isolated, is they're pissing away money. Now, money is not the most important thing in the world, but if our money keeps – we're on the tipping point. When it happens, it's going to happen so fast you won't see it coming. If we run out of money, we run out of everything. No defense, no food, no water, no infrastructure. You're talking about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour? You can raise it to $400 an hour, but if the dollar's worth nothing, it doesn't matter. These are the important issues, and these are the issues that most people avoid because they're unpleasant. And you're called a doomer and gloomer. Be a realist. Yet people understand these things. Let's fix it. This is a lengthy clip. It's about 14 and a half minutes. But pay attention because you're not hearing this stuff elsewhere. And these people know what they're talking about. And Chris and I will be back on the other side of this. Call the number 646-649-1013, 646-649-1013.
Should have moved into Baghdad?
No.
Why not?
Because if we'd gone to Baghdad, we would have been all alone. There wouldn't have been anybody else with us. It would have been a U.S. occupation of Iraq. None of the Arab forces that were willing to fight with us in Kuwait were willing to invade Iraq. Once you got to Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off, part of it the Syrians would like to have to the west, part of eastern Iraq, the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire if you go that far and try to take over Iraq. The other thing was casualties. Everyone was impressed with the fact that we were able to do our job with as few casualties as we had. But for the 146 Americans killed in action and for their families, it wasn't a cheap war. And the question for the president in terms of whether or not we went on to Baghdad and took additional casualties in an effort to get Saddam Hussein was how many additional dead Americans is Saddam worth? And our judgment was not very many.
A speech Rand Paul was giving references a recorded 1995 interview in which Cheney defends the first President Bush's decision not to go into Iraq during Desert Storm, referencing the expense, an eventual civil war in the country, and no realistic exit strategy. Check it out.
Dick Cheney said it would be a bad idea, and that's why the first Bush didn't go into Baghdad. Dick Cheney goes to work for Halliburton, makes hundreds of millions of dollars as CEO. Next thing you know, he's back in government. It's a good idea to go into Iraq.
She goes on to point out that 9/11 offered an easily exploited opportunity for Cheney to help mastermind an Iraq invasion
Ukraine,
and make a pile of cash.
The political significance of natural gas, budding alliances between Russia and China, Russia creating an economic zone in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. These are actually things I talked about in my first book, Currency Wars. So in other words, if you read that book in 2011, you'll know you would certainly get advance warning what's going on in 2014. The point of the death of money is I talk about these things also, but I take the story forward. So read the death of money today if you want to know what's going to happen 3 years from now. If you read Currency Wars in 2011, there's nothing happening now that comes as a surprise because I talked about all these things. And, you know, CNBC was reporting today that, you know, what's going on right now, of course, is there's this annual economic summit in St. Petersburg, Russia. And this time of year, you know, they call it the White Knights. And the reason it's the White Knights, you know, N-I-G-H-T-S, not with a K, because, you know, it's light almost 24 hours a day in St. Petersburg because, you know, it's the middle or close to summer and it's fairly far north. And it's been a very popular venue for years. It's kind of like Davos or, you know, the Milken Institute, one of these places where the global elites gather. This year it's a little different because, you know, the U.S. is not going and the White House has put pressure on U.S. CEOs not to go. It's kind of a joke, actually. I was in London recently and I talked to one of the largest private equity investors in the world. And he said, you know, Jim, I want to go to Russia, but I've got deals to do. I want to buy gold mines in Siberia, et cetera. But I'm not going to do them right now because my government wouldn't be happy. In other words, real business people are ready to go to Russia and do business, but they feel it wouldn't look good from the government's perspective. But anyway, but the summit's going ahead. There are a lot of attendees. And Putin said this morning that he envisions a Eurasian economic zone involving Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and Russia. And I've spoken about the ruble. The Russian ruble is nowhere near ready to be a global reserve currency, but it could be a regional reserve currency. And that's something I talk about in both my books. That was all described in Currency Wars, as I said, in 2011. So not news, not a surprise to those readers.
Don't
talk about the acquisition of gold by Russia and China. So it really takes the story forward.
Well, the ruble could just cut into like the yuan and all these other currencies. If people just start trading them and buying, Russia saying, hey, listen, if you want to buy our oil and natural gas, you're going to have to use, rubles, which means that you won't be using dollars. This whole pipeline thing, this whole energy deal excludes the dollar, and it's pretty scary. I had Charles Nenner on, and he says, well, you and him are, a lot alike, just like John Williams. Your predictions are, you know, very similar. Your views are very similar. Consensus. I know you all don't sit around and talk to each other. You probably have in the past. But anyway, Nenner is saying that he thinks the beginning of the end of the dollar is this year as the world's reserve currency. He thinks 2014 it's going to collapse or begin to collapse.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Greg, I saw your interview with Charles Nenner. I haven't spoken to him, but I did see your interview. I thought it was very good. I recommend viewers have a look at that. But, the death of money was published in early April. But, you know, I finished the writing really in late 2013, you know, added a few sections as late as December 2013. But if you ask me one surprise, say, Jim, what has happened since you finished writing the book that comes as a surprise? I would say a lot of the things I talked about are happening faster than I would have expected. Things that I thought might happen in 2015, 2016, in that time frame, seem to be happening now in some ways. So if anything, the tempo of events is faster than I expected. Some of these catastrophic outcomes, therefore, may come sooner than I wrote about. So Nana may be right. I mean, here's the thing. We're right on the precipice now. When you're on the precipice, it doesn't mean you fall off immediately, but you're going to fall off. You can see the forces in play. And what I tell clients and investors is it's not as if we're going to make some mistakes and bad things are going to happen. The mistakes have already been made. The instability is already in the system. We're just waiting for that catalyst, you know, what I call the snowflake that starts the avalanche. You know, when a snowflake starts an avalanche, you don't worry about the snowflakes. You worry about the fact that the snow is unstable. It was just waiting to collapse. And that's where the system is now. The instability is built in. I mean, this is not easy forensically. You've got to look in a lot of places. You have to know how the system works. You have to really dig. But that's what I like to do. I like to stick to hard evidence and not engage in some of the, you know, more wild speculation you read on some of these websites, et cetera. But, you know, in 2008, the banker said, gee, this is great. We were bailed out. You know, we get to keep our jobs. We get to keep our bonuses. We get to keep ripping off savers and ripping off the economy. This is a really good deal for us. You know, pay ourselves big bonuses, et cetera. But what they're gradually discovering is that there was a price to pay. You know, it's really a deal with the devil. The price to pay is that the banks are now captive by the government. The government can shut down or break up any one of them whenever they want. And using that as a threat behind the scenes, they can force the banks to buy the bonds. So if the Fed balance sheet gets tapped out, which it is, and now we have this European mystery buyer, which maybe there's a limit on that, they can always turn to the banks. So this can go on for a long time. But the problem is, at what point do investors, citizens, countries around the world just say, you know what, this is obviously such a game. There's obviously no way out. You sort of have the Fed has two choices, and they're both bad. If they continue the taper, which they may, they're tapering into weakness, they're going to throw the U.S. into a recession within the depression. We've been in the depression since 2007, but you can have a little bit of growth in the depression. It just means that depression just means your growth is below trend. But you can have multiple recessions in a depression, which is what we had in the Great Depression from 1929 to 1940. There were two technical recessions, 1929 to 1933 and 1937. So this could be the second recession within a depression if the Fed continues to taper. If they don't continue to taper, they pause, which is a possibility, and they increase asset purchases, maybe in 2015, you know, people call it QE4 or whatever, then this will be a signal to the market that the Fed has got to keep printing. And then gold's going to go up and the dollar's going to collapse, because it'll be very obvious that there's no way for this game to end. So the Fed has kind of two choices, depression, hyperinflation. Good luck with that. But that's what happens when you manipulate markets. You paint yourself into a corner.
Talk about what the Iraqi crisis could mean for the global economy. Earlier, I spoke with Peter Schiff. He's the president of Euro-Pacific Capital, Inc. I first asked him how Iraq's domestic economy would be impacted if the Beji refinery falls into the hands of militants.
Well, you know, I'm really not that sure how it's going to impact Iraq. But, you know, I think there's a situation there that unfortunately we helped create, which is one of the reasons, among many, that I was opposed to us going into Iraq in the first place, because I was afraid that once we went in there and withdrew, that something like this would happen. And now we're in a situation where we have no good policy options left.
Well, Iraq is the second largest oil producer in OPEC and has the fifth largest crude oil reserves. When you look at the global economy, how large of a role does Iraq play in the world's oil market?
Well, I mean, on the margin, it's a significant supplier, and I'm bullish on oil anyway. I think the price of oil is going up regardless of what happens in Iraq. But to the extent that Iraqi production is disrupted by civil war, that's only going to be more bullish for the price of oil, and it's going to affect the global economy in that oil is going to be more expensive, and that's going to be a negative unless, of course, you own oil and you've got it to sell. So there are some economies that might benefit, those that are supplying oil into the market, and others that have to buy oil are going to have to pay more for it, and that's like a tax.
And what kind of impact could the crisis have specifically on large gas consumption countries like China and India? Would they have to look elsewhere?
Well, I mean, there's oil as long as they're willing to pay for it. And, you know, it's just going to bid the price up. But I think the demand is going to continue to grow in emerging markets like China and Asia. I'm more worried about, or China, India, I'm more worried about how it might affect the United States. Because American consumers are already tapped out. They're loaded up with debt. They've got part-time, low-paying jobs, and Americans drive a lot. I mean, more than any other people, we're dependent on our cars. We don't have a really great public transportation system. A lot of Americans have to drive a long way to get to their low-paying jobs, and they may not be able to afford higher gasoline prices. I think the Chinese or the Indians, based on how little they drive, are more likely to afford the increases than Americans.
So do you expect the price of gas to go up in the coming days for American drivers?
Well, I mean, I can't forecast it in the coming days. I mean, in general, I think the price is more likely to go up on any given day than it is go down, because I think gas prices are headed much, much higher. You know, it's interesting. We got the Fed minutes today, and Janet Yellen in her testimony said that she's still worried that inflation is too low, that inflation is below her target. I mean, first of all, inflation can't be too low. The lower, the better. But if you look at the trailing CPI for the last 12 months, even the government acknowledges that inflation is just above 2%. So how is 2.1 below their 2% target? I don't know how the Fed is massaging these numbers, and it's likely that inflation numbers are going to get higher, trend higher in the future, and obviously significant increases in oil prices that's going to bleed through to the pump. And also in electricity bills, that is only going to make the CPI worse.
Well, we've heard a lot of talk about energy independence from the Middle East and the U.S. Take a listen to this clip of what a North Dakota Treasury Secretary said to U.S. troops earlier this year.
To help make our nation and our world an energy independent country so that you and your fellow officers and enlisted folks never have to go over there again in order to fight for the oil that we all need.
So apparently we're going over there to fight for oil. What are your thoughts on what she had to say?
Well, that may be the very reason that we went there in the first place. It might have been over oil. Some people thought it was over other things. But, you know, I can certainly feel families that lost loved ones or Americans who lost limbs and saw their comrades fall because they were told they were there to restore an independent and democratic Iraq, and now the whole thing is falling apart. And we may, in fact, leave Iraq in a worse place than when we found it. And it may even be a greater threat to America as a result of having deposed Saddam than it would have been had we left him in power.
And considering the U.S. has spent large amounts of money on this war, of course, also on the Afghanistan war, how much should that weigh on their decision on the kind of involvement they choose to have in Iraq right now?
Well, first of all, you know, we borrowed the money, which is even worse. And so if we're going to go back into Iraq, which we're going to have to do if we want to prevent the country from disintegrating, we're going to have to borrow even more money. But here's the problem. And I mean, you know, you're talking about two wrongs maybe making a right. We never should have went in there in the first place. But if we don't go back in there, the whole thing is going to fall apart and our whole foreign policy is going to collapse. If we do go back in there to restore order, we can never leave. It's like a permanent occupancy of Iraq. How is that going to go over in the Middle East? And how much money are we going to have to borrow?
Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it the Syrians would like to have to the west. Part of eastern Iraq the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a
That was Darth Cheney in 1994 talking about the quagmire that Iraq would be, not to be confused with the Darth Cheney of 2001 to 2003, who thinks that destabilizing Iraq would actually work out now. What changed between the time that it wouldn't work out and be a quagmire till the time that it is a quagmire, which is from 2003 to today? I'm guessing his Halliburton stock price. But, you know, that correlation doesn't necessarily equate to causation, but it just makes you go, hmm. So, Chris, you want to comment on that? I know it was a long clip. We had, you know, a lot of information in there talking about the dollar collapse, the China and Russian deals, as well as Schiff's views on the mess and oil prices in Iraq. But I think the interesting thing to me is, you know, people say, oh, they're just doomers and gloomers. Well, but their predictions have been right because they're based on sound analysis. And if that isn't a kick in the pants for people, the fact that a collapse is imminent, it isn't a possibility, it is going to happen, which means that when there is something like the opening that Bratt created by ousting Cantor, instead of sitting back on your ass and worrying about whether we're going to kill more Iraqis or not, how about making those calls so that we can actually get conservatives in there? Because if we don't have people who know how the Constitution works and know how sound money works, when the collapse happens, we're screwed. So since it's going to happen anyway, what could possibly motivate you more than doing something to prepare for it now by getting the right leadership in there? Could it possibly be anything else? I can't imagine anything else. Anyway, it's to you.
Well, a couple things. Number one, that is a great clip, and people should listen to not just the clip, but the full interviews behind that. And there's several people, you know, Rickards and Schiff and a couple other people that were mentioned on there that are, these are guys who speak the truth. And they are like conservatives, and like when Rand Paul, you know, is being attacked by Hannity, and Rand goes, what would I do? I would defer to the Constitution and take it to the people and take it to Congress. See, what Hannity was looking for was, see, the Republicans right, see, the Bush was right, you know, Cheney was right, yeah, we, you know, it was all Obama's fault, we gotta, you know, we gotta get back in there, we gotta blow shit up, and we gotta take control, and we gotta make Iraq America. You know, that was, he was trying to fight that, you know, that side, because, you know, and I don't totally dislike Hannity, some of his stuff is great, but his foreign policy sucks, and he's a fool, and he gave Cheney more respect and more airtime than he gave a standing senator, Rand Paul, who's proven that he cares about the country, he cares about the Constitution, he cares about sound money, and he cares about, you know, sane war. In other words, if the U.S. is going to pull a trigger on another country and interfere with another country, it needs to go before Congress, which means really it needs to go before the people of the country, that we've got to break this evil freaking cycle. And he treated Rand like shit. And I mean, I haven't even got over there yet to give him a earful, but I will. But when you listen to these guys, it isn't a doom and gloom. Here's the part, because it's just like the Tea Party, the way they represent the Tea Party, which is not a party. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. It's not a party. It's people who care about, I'm paying too damn much taxes. I care about my country. I want my religious freedoms. I want to be able to own my guns. I want to be able to defend my family. I want a sane government. You know, I want sanity. I want a sound economy. How could anybody see a problem with that? Well, the problem is the people in power who abuse the Constitution, abuse economics, who abuse the Fed, who stand behind all the wars because, you know, because the war machine, you know, it's a $650 billion industry. Add it with the Pentagon and the rest of it, it's $1 trillion a year. It's a lot of money. And it's a tremendous amount of money. And it, they have big lobbyists, and they give a lot of money to both parties. And you can always tell a war industry-controlled politician by how they respond to things. You know, the first thing is, we need to go in, we need to go in, we need to go in, boots on the ground. All options need to be on the table. I was paid to get some more war going on because that's all I got, because I don't stand for anything. That is what is running your country. Not all of them, the majority of them. So when you get back to these guys like Rickard and Schiff, who are their predictions are scary accurate, and they were scary accurate before. You read his book he wrote 3 years ago. Everything that's happening today is in his book 3 years ago. You know, Schiff predicted the last two economic collapses to the T, and everybody was arguing with him all the way up until the collapse, and then as soon as the Fed started printing money and they started screwing around and TARP and bailouts and all this bull crap and the stock market started rolling again, of course people didn't have jobs, but stock market was rolling and everybody's making money again, then they start arguing with him again. And it's just embarrassing. And it's embarrassing how stupid the talking heads are, but it's embarrassing that people listen to the talking heads without getting an alternate point of view from people who have been accurate in the past and many times and are predicting what's coming. Here's the question you have to ask yourself. When you said that doom and gloom thing, that was a key point, and something popped into my head. Did we just have a crash in 2008? Okay. Was that kind of gloomy and kind of doomy? But was it real? Yes. Did we have a Great Depression? Yes. Have we had multiple recessions since then? Yes. Okay. They happen. And they will happen again. The more manipulation you have of currency, because we don't have real money anymore, gold standard gone, Republican, Nixon, okay, we have currency, fake money printed out of thin air on a computer and then moved into the market, into the system. So here's what these guys are saying. Now, Rickert is probably one of the most deeply analytical people, because I've listened to a lot of his stuff. And that guy does research, you know, I mean, he gets into the numbers, he gets into the politics. But the thing that's key to this, and this is where a lot of the foreign policy you never hear in the media, you never hear on the talking heads, you know, the so-called conservative talk radio, okay, they're not, trust me. All right, you never hear from any of these people is the power shift that is occurring in the world. Like I said before, you played the clip. The only reason the United States has been able to live like a drunken college teenager for the last 50, 60 years, especially since they got us off the gold standard, is they can print money and the world uses the U.S. dollar for trade, or the majority of the world uses the U.S. dollar for the trade dollar and the petrodollar. Well, that's already dropped by 15 points since the end of 99. Most of these wars that you think, whether it's Ukraine or Syria or Iran or, you know, Libya or Iraq or anything, had to do with the U.S. petrodollar and pipelines, okay? And that's what it really boils down to. The people in power of this country who have bastardized this country for the last 50, 60, 70 years, especially since World War II, and all the way back to 1913, if you want to get really analytical, they're at the end of their wits. They have tapped the system dry. They borrowed everything they can. They printed everything they can. Our economy isn't recovering, and the world is moving away from the dollar. I mean, our industry started leaving in the 90s, big time. By the end of the 90s, it was an exit strategy out of this country as fast as you can. Now, most of our major industries, you know, headquartered somewhere else. And they ain't coming back. You know, they're not going to just come, oh, I want to come back and pay the highest corporate tax in the world and the highest regulatory fees and the highest environmental fees and the highest labor and the high, you know, yeah, and I want to pay for Obamacare while I'm at it. Let me come back from my profitable, you know, venture in China or Taiwan or Singapore, and let's come back to America and go broke. Why would they come back? You know, it's amazing to me when I get these people, you know, talking about, oh, industry in America, and I'm going, well, if I had a company and I was a $10 billion a year company overseas and was making profit, living high on the hog, why would I come back here to go broke? I mean, sometimes you just got to ask yourself simple questions to understand. And here's the key. None of the, or not none, but 98% of those fine fellows, men and women in Congress are doing nothing about this. Republicans included. Boehner has handed Obama everything on a silver platter he could, and he's pushed through things, like you talk about the Haskell rule. He pushed through things, broke his own rules, just like, you know, they love to talk about, the mouse, Reid, over there in the Senate, breaking the Senate rules. Well, Boehner's done it in the House, because in 2010, we put in a pretty good chunk of fairly new, young, conservative people, you know, who wanted to fix the problem. And so what he had to do is circumnavigate the rules so he could push crap through and make sure he gave his buddy Obama everything he asked for. And he would whine and moan and cry, you know, and then go play some more golf and then come back and then push it through and then act like he didn't want to do it, but he had to do it, which is a bunch of crap. And anybody who's lived through Newt Gingrich's era as Speaker of the House knows it's a bunch of crap, because Gingrich was able to stop and bring an extremely liberal, young, popular president that could actually speak without a teleprompter back towards the center and actually get some reforms in government, including paying down the debt and balanced budgets, not kind of like you and I would like, but, you know, the only ones you've seen anything close to it in your lifetime. So, you know, it's just all bull crap, Rex. And all the crap going on overseas, whether it's Ukraine, Syria, Iran, Iraq, blowing Libya up, everything that's going on has to do with oil, pipelines, gas, and debt. That's it. It's that simple if you really want to understand foreign policy. So whatever Fox says is bull crap. Whatever CNN says is bull crap. Whatever comes out of the president's mouth is bull crap. Whatever comes out of Lindsey Graham or McCain's mouth is bull crap. Whatever comes out of your talking head, you know, so-called conservative talking head radio host is bull crap. Not one of them is telling you the truth. Because what what we're coming into is our turn. In other words, the Republicans get in and screw it up, and then there's a sweeping win of Democrats. Just look at the cycle, people. Do some research. Look at the cycle. So the Democrats get in. They take it too far to the left, run up the debt, you know, screw up some things, do some wars, don't do some wars, whatever. Republicans beat them up for their term in office, and then the voters get sick of it because they're paying more taxes, they're pissed off, nothing's changing, so then they vote the Republicans back in. Or you get a balance of power, but usually swaying one way or the other. And then they do it, and then the other group gets in. That's all that's happening. It's the Republicans' term. They want the NSA the way it is. They've been defending it. They want the IRS scandal. The Republicans knew about the IRS scandal a long time ago. But why didn't they do anything about it back then? Because it was against the conservatives and the Tea Party groups. And they hate the Tea Party because they hate the Constitution just as much as the Democrats do. This is real simple stuff. So it's all of it is cause and effect. You have to ask yourself, what is the goal? Who is saying it? And who is their backer? How long have they been in Congress? And then go to the New America or Heritage, look up their voting record, and go, oh, I got that person pegged now. Quit listening to these people and start getting people in there and supporting people, whether it be a MOSH, which is definitely more towards the libertarian side, the Austrian economics, all that kind of wonderful stuff, you know, to Rand, to Ted, and you may have, you know, I have issues I don't like on any of them, okay? But for the most part, if we had 100 more like them in Congress, I would say the country would be in better shape. Is it going to be perfect? No, it's not. We got a lot of problems because we have too big of a government. And it's not going to go away, and it's not going to go away definitely under the Democrats, and it's definitely not going to go away under the, you know, the Boehners and the Ryans. I mean, people who think Paul Ryan's a conservative or a Santorum, you know, social conservative does not mean you're a conservative if you abuse the Constitution. I just don't understand people, Rex, how they can be so naive to think that, well, he's a good Catholic, so that makes him good on economics. No, not really. You know, that really makes it worse to me as a Christian because he's abusing the Constitution on many of his votes and many of the things he stands behind. And, you know, I am not going to pit all my life on one thing. Oh, he's pro-life, you know, so that makes him good. No, not necessarily. In fact, it makes it worse because he's abusing the rest of the tenets of his role and responsibility in government. And I don't know if people ever I really don't know. I don't know if people are ever going to wake up. I thought the Romney debacle and what the RNC did at the convention would have woke people up, but I thought the 2010 Tea Party movement and the election of a whole new batch of new young, you know, people who were going to, you know, stand by the Constitution and fight the corruption would have woke people up, but I don't know. We live in a game show society. Everything is sports. And American Idol and reality TV and Xbox and it's all, you know, football. Us against them, us against the, you know, the evil of the world, and all the news and Fox News and Levin and Hannity got to get up to do is, you know, we need a new Cold War because that will change everything in Europe and cause a bunch of conflict over there so we can get our TPP, you know, trade deal going and so let's make Putin the enemy, you know. Irregardless of any facts on the ground or anything. Let's just make him the enemy. Everybody get all pissed off, and then it's our team against him, his team. And then we can go, you know, like topple a country like Ukraine and put in a puppet government and make everybody's life hell on earth and hurt everybody, including Europe, you know, by doing that. But we got our puppet in there, so what the hell? I don't know if people ever wake up. I know there's always going to be people who get it and care, people who kind of get it and kind of care, and people who are just sheep. And they just watch the news, and they go, oh, okay, that's who we hate this week. Oh, that's terrible. We need to invade Iraq again. Oh, yeah, Assad must go. I don't know why, but Fox News said so. So, and Hannity and Levin and Rush. So it's got to be. It's got to be. He's a bad guy. He's got to go. You know? I don't know, Rex. I really don't. Different world than I grew up in, and I don't know where it's going. I don't know if I've said it before. It's going to have to crash before people wake up. Is the dollar going to have to crash? Are we going to have to end up in World War IV? I don't know. Back to you.
Yeah. It'll be too late. And irrespective of whether you do something about it now or not, it's going to crash. The point is that how quickly may you recover? I think that's really what we're talking about. And real quick, just do some quick housekeeping. Whenever Chris mentions his group, he's talking about Liberty's Talk on Facebook. Get in there. There's a lot of good stuff from different sources, so it's triangulated for trying to get down to the truth rather than some kind of one-sided source. And folks, understand something. The alternate media has as much control in it as the, quote, mainstream media. There are paid trolls. There's intentional misinformation out there. So don't just find your favorite alternate media source and run with it. And everything that you find on, Weasel Zippers or InfoWars is, you know, the absolute truth. You got to cross-reference your sources. That's very, very key. Liberty's Talk, that's Chris's group. And Liberty's Thunder is our Facebook page. Make sure you like it. You'll get notifications of broadcast times and important things like last Thursday's majority leader whip election so you can do something about it. And don't forget, this Tuesday we got big primaries, especially the runoff with Thad Rhino Cochran and Chris McDaniels. So, you know, don't just sit back and watch it. If you got money, send it. If you don't got money, take a half hour of your time, and instead of, you know, shoving Cheetos down your throat and watching football, how about you make some calls to the good people in Mississippi and get them to go with McDaniel to make a change. In about 5 minutes, your browser is going to cut you off. We're probably going to go another 15 minutes or so, and I've got a closing clip with a little bit of Dwight Eisenhower talking military-industrial complex and little Dr. Paul kind of putting it in perspective. That will be after we close out. If you want to listen live, you have to call in and listen on your handset. Your browser will cut you off. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. If you're in podcast or on the Internet, just keep on rolling. Remember, regular show times, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. That's 9 p.m. Eastern Sundays. And all of our shows are available anytime. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, find Liberty's Thunder. You click on the title. It plays right in your browser. You go below the scrolling graphics. You get it, right-click download. You get an MP3. Listen to your MP3-enabled device or email it to someone or burn a CD and take it to your Republican Party meeting, Campaign for Liberty meeting, Tea Party meeting, AA meeting. I don't care. Just get it out there. Here's the thing, which was just what Chris was talking about. Most people in America today, even though demographics have changed things and government indoctrination centers have propagandized the youth, but most people still identify with conservative principles when you understand what they are. The constitutional limits on government, both the horizontal across the branches and the vertical between the states and the people and the federal government. Most people believe in free markets, knowing that an ordered free market is one in which it is easy to enter the market as a producer and easy to be a consumer in that same market rather than having the government funnel everything and twist it towards the ends of their connected corporations. Most people don't know dick about money other than how to look at their paycheck and wonder why 40% of it disappeared, and then, how to calculate the tax on whatever they're purchasing for their kids' school lunch or whatever they're doing, okay? That's not the issue. That's simple arithmetic. The real issue with money is how the Federal Reserve scheme works. It is fake money. It is debt money. It is loaned to us at interest, and it is debased, and it is dangerous, and it's not that complicated. Now, you don't have to get into the whole notion of easing and graphs and stochastic methods and all that kind of stuff. Just know that it's fake. It's legalized counterfeiting. These are the things you have to get across to people, especially people who tend to vote Republican, and especially explain to them that just because the asshat that's been in office for 30 years sounds like a conservative, and maybe at one point he actually might have been a conservative, doesn't make him a conservative now. The Republican Party is a captured interest. They work for the corporations that fund their campaigns. They work for the Federal Reserve. They work for the AIPAC lobby. They work for the Saudi lobby. They work for the military-industrial complex. They work for Big Pharma. This is who owns them. And they don't only own them. They own the channels, Clear Channel, which is where Rush and Levin and Hannity are heard, and even Laura Ingraham, right? This is where you hear them. So in minor races, in off-season races, regular time, they'll sound the conservative charge. And then when it comes right down to it, they fold and buckle for the rhino, just like they did in 2012. Don't buy their bullshit. Fox News is a captured interest. Murdoch is now meeting with Valerie Jarrett to talk about how to convince, quote, conservative Fox News watchers, when you get past the big boob blondes and even the chicks on there, they're going to convince you how amnesty is the most important thing to grow the party. As if illegal aliens who are here to get the free crap are somehow suddenly going to become good Republican voters. Give me a break. Now, let's be clear. A lot of words are used regarding this topic. Immigration reform, amnesty, these ambiguous terms that don't mean squat so that you can impute whatever it is that you're feeling so that if the guy's in favor of it and you don't like the issue, you're against him. And if you like the issue, then you're for him. It's just designed to manipulate you. We do have to find some way to give legal status to those people who are not violent criminals that are already within our borders because, A, it's going to cost too much to try to send them back wherever they might have come from. B, you might be breaking up families and it's not a wise thing to do. And C, it is just a complicated quagmire. But legal status doesn't mean citizenship. Legal status doesn't mean you get to vote. Okay? But none of this matters until you secure the border, which is not an immigration issue. It is a national security issue. We're talking about sending troops and air support and guns to pick one group of jihadis over another group of jihadis in Iraq, when in fact we have an open sieve on our southern border with diseases coming across, with probably Muslim jihadi terrorists coming across, with drug dealers and child traffickers. That's what we should be focusing on. Make sure you call in now. You got 90 seconds before you are cut off. But that's the kind of thing that has to be done. Then immigration reform. Well, you know, we want immigrants. We're a country of immigrants. There's nothing wrong with that. Somebody who wants to come here and be American, not someone who wants to come here and get the freebies in the system that the neocons and the left have built, but someone who wants to come here and contribute and work and do stuff, that's fantastic. We want them to come in through the front door. But when one out of four people who already live here doesn't have a job, it's probably not the time to be inviting foreigners. Fix your economy so that you will have to invite people from all over the world because there won't be enough labor to meet the demand of our exploding economy because of sound money and regulatory reform that allows an even playing field to access the market where government is only supporting the rule of law to make the market available for producers and entrepreneurs, and where capitalists don't buy government, but they seek the highest return on their money by finding those risks that they want to take with entrepreneurs that are going to benefit the most people. That's what we want to get back to. Instead, we're focusing on Iraq. And because – and look, here's how they get you, all right? Maybe you were for the Iraq invasion. Maybe you weren't. It doesn't really matter, okay? It's not 2003, okay? So you have to put it in perspective, all right? Chris's son served. My brother was over there in both theaters. And when someone you love goes into the battle, you have a real hard time beating up on the political motives of the war because the only thing you're concerned about is your loved one coming home safely, and the only thing they're concerned about is doing the best damn job that they can do. But his son and my brother have both told us those people cannot be trained in our ways. They don't understand a federalist system. They don't understand a centralized government with relatively autonomous regions. When it comes to military capacity, they don't have the same mentality. For them, it's an issue of tribal superiority. If you're part of the dominant tribe, you get to kill everybody else. And if you're not part of the dominant tribe, maybe you end up putting on a cop or military uniform, but when the dominant tribe comes, you run. It's a different thing altogether. We cannot train them in our ways. They have to find their own path. We can lead them by example. We can trade with them. That's what we do. But if we go over there and tip the scales one way or another, you get the mess you've gotten now. You got this swath of ISIS Sunnis in between a Shia Baghdad, Shia Iran, and Hezbollah in Lebanon. That's a disaster, and it leads right up Russia's ass, which is not someone we want to get into it with, because guess what? They're a powerful nuclear country. All right, we had a Cold War with Russia for 40-some years. We should not be poking around in their backyard. Let them have their sphere of influence. Let's be cold partners, warm partners. I don't care, but we do not need to be fighting with them or the Chinese, and certainly we can't afford to do it now. These are things you have to think about. And the only way you're going to make that happen is if you are the one who is the voice to get conservative principles of non-interventionism. We're not isolationists. That's just a label they use to scare the shit out of you and convince Republican voters, this Tea Party libertarian faction of the Republican Party, they're gonna have us speaking Mandarin and Cyrillic because they're giving up. We're not giving up. We want the strongest military. This is the Reagan principle, peace through strength. The only one that even sounds remotely like that for real is Rand Paul. So what does Sean Hannity do? He beats up on him. Sean Hannity is a cheerleader and quite possibly a fucking moron. There goes the F-bomb, sorry. The point is, you cannot buy everything that these so-called conservative pundits tell you or the Republican Party talking heads tell you. Think for yourself. It is far more patriotic and far more supportive of your military to use them as a strong defense, the most powerful and potent fighting force on the planet that will not provoke anybody. But should you even look at us funny, we will obliterate you. And that's what you do in war. You don't pansy around with, let's disband their military and then retrain them to be blah, 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 blah. Give me a break. When you go to war, your purpose is to end it quickly and win. If you can't win, don't start. Define what winning is. All right? If you're going to be an empire, quit going over there and start mucking around so that Halliburton can get wealthy Darth Cheney's stock can go up. If you're going to go be an empire, you go in there, you kill everybody, you take their stuff, and you come home. But that's not who we are. So how about we only go to war when it is a legitimate American interest, okay? Not an Israeli interest, not a Saudi interest, not a corporate interest, but a legitimate national American interest, and fight it right. There are really 4 points to actual just war. From our legal standpoint, unless we are directly threatened, it requires a congressional declaration of war so that the people's representatives will debate it and make a decision before we commit money and troops. Just war says that, number one, the damage inflicted by the aggressor of the nation or community of nations must be lasting, grave, and certain. Bunch of desert-dwelling jihadis who are fighting over whether the successor of Muhammad is a Sunni or a Shia, it's none of our business. We don't care. All right? All other means of putting an end to it must have been shown to be impractical or ineffective. Well, if we weren't financing them and giving them weapons, they probably would be killing each other with swords and sticks and stones. Let them. We don't care. There must be a serious prospect of success. How do you have success in the Middle East by going in and toppling secular regimes of authoritarian assholes, no doubt, in order to replace them with extremist Muslim jihadi caliphates? What do you think these caliphates are intending on doing? Read the Quran. It says clearly, the house of war versus the house of peace, Dar al-Harb and Dar al-Islam, right? That's their view of the world, which means when they think that they're powerful enough, their mission is to subdue the world and make everybody a Muslim or kill them. That's it. Well, don't let them crawl out of their holes and come after us, but as long as they don't, they want to kill each other over there, that's not our business. One of them steps foot on a subway in New York, kill him, go back there, find his family, kill all of them and wipe them out. Eventually, they'll stop doing it. Number four, the use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. The power of modern means of destruction weighs very heavily in evaluating this condition. So you think about this. We invade Iraq. We topple the secular regime. Was Saddam a dick? Yes. Was he bad? Yes. Did he kill his own people? Yes. That's their problem to figure out. But we go in there and we topple that regime, right? And instead of setting up some kind of parliamentary monarchy and semi-authoritarian state, because that's what they're used to, we go in with this notion of democracy, and all of a sudden there's a majority Muslim Shia government. I mean, it's insane, right? But in the meantime, what happened? 400,000 Christians were killed. Now, when in the hell did the United States go into a conflict to topple a government that caused the death of that many Christians? Just think about that. Same thing in Syria. That's just war. What we're doing is not just war. That doesn't mean, and I love Trog's line, he's not anti-war, he's anti-bullshit. We always have to be ready for war. An ancient Roman phrase was always, in peace, prepare for war. You're always ready for war because it is always going to be here. This whole John Lennon imagined peacenik bullshit that somehow we're all going to sing kumbaya and sit around naked beating drums in the woods and everybody's going to get along is a fantasy. There will always be war, and you must always be ready to win those wars and win them decisively. But don't go sticking your nose in places where it doesn't matter and picking fights that don't mean anything to you or your people. And right now, they are ginning up the jingoism. They're managing your mind because they want this damn war, and they want you to want it. And that's what they're doing. We probably have to wrap this up soon, Chris, so I'll let you go now.
Hey, man, I was, like, zoning out. That was really pretty fantastic little run there. I was just absorbing it. I was thinking, wow, man, do I have anything to add to that at all? I'll dig deep. You know, the concept of war in America in the last 100-plus years has been a marketing tool, you know, and anybody want to really understand how because there's several things that are required, well, used to be required for wars. You had to have the money. Now we just print it or borrow it, like Schiff said. You had to have a force. You had to be able to, you know, draw from your youth, you know, able-bodied young men and women, and, you know, they're willing to die for the cause. And then you had to have the corporations behind it, the banks behind it, and then you had to have the people behind it. You want to study modern marketing, study Edward Bernays, because he's the guy that got women to smoke. He's the guy that figured the marketing strategy to get American ginned up and, in a rough economic time and join and fight in the First World War. Most people still don't know why we were there. They don't even know what the war was about. They don't even know who the players were. They think it was Germany. You know, there's just so little people even understood. It had nothing to do with us. And we went over there and, you know, killed a generation of our young men and started this off on a debt run. And that was right after the Fed was formed. So everything was fine because that's what they want. You know, we've never paid off the money for the Civil War yet. You know, banks want debt. And corporations, the industrial war complex, and politicians and the people behind it want war. And it's really very simple. So it's a sad thing because I've had family in every conflict, you know, all the way back to even before the country was founded. And I've always been this red-blooded American that, you know, kick ass, take names, defend your country, don't take any crap, you know, because I was, you know, I'm part of the Reagan era. And we had this monstrous enemy, you know, the communist Russia. And, of course, we had communist China, but their economy was crap, and they were kind of subdued at that point in time. But most of our foreign policy and this manipulation policy where we back dictators while we're funding rebels you know, to go against that dictator, to, you know, cause disruption, all came out of a doctrine that was used to battle communist Russia, and mostly really came out of the South American conflicts that were going on because the communists were moving into South America. And so here's the problem. It's the same assholes and the same policy. That's the problem. It's the same banks. It's the same industrial war machine. It's the same foreign policy concept. It's the same manipulate, shadow, what's, you know, doing all this crap behind the scenes, NGOs disrupting the society, trying to topple government so you can put in a puppet government that's, you know, that will kiss the U.S.'s butt. Here, that's the problem. It's an old foreign policy doctrine against, you know, the communist USSR. All right? It's a whole new world today. Now, people are people, and what you said was very important. We're always going to have violence. We're always going to have corruption. We're always going to have, you know, I mean, the world's an ugly place. And mankind just can't get along. You know, you're going to have religious wars. It ain't going to go away soon. You can destroy religion in America, but it ain't going to be destroyed around the world. People are just, you know, they're at each other's throat. You know, it's territorial, it's tribal, it's whatever. Oil, gas, you know, who stole my camel? I mean, it's never going to end. You know, this utopian concept that liberals out of the 60s, you know, smoking and doing their LSD, thinking that they were going to create some, you know, unisex, you know, non-aggressive world. I mean, these people are nuts. There's no doubt about it. Unfortunately, they're in our education system. They're in our government. They're in our government departments. You know, they have this utopian concept. You know, it's just insane. I mean, these people are just insane. But the people who perpetuate the debt and the war and the lies in the media, the people who control the media, the big corporations that profit from war, they're not insane. They're evil. And they will sacrifice your children, sacrifice your nation's economy, you know, allow you to pay more taxes, destroy your economy, turn you into a debt slave, turn your country into a debt slave, bribe your politicians, threaten people, anything and everything for profit. And it's embarrassing. It's sad. It has nothing to do with patriotism, and the saddest part is that more people don't get it. We just went through 12, 13 years of hell. Our economy's toast. The world economy crashed. You know, Iraq was a failure. Afghanistan was a failure. We blew up a country, Libya. Nobody even questioned it. A couple people. That was it. You know, totally destroyed a country. 47 out of 50 weapons depot, millions of weapons and ammunition spread all over the Middle East and North Africa and got in the hands of some very bad people. Now we got more well-funded, well-armed armies of crazy people that want to impose their sixth century, you know, rules on women and children and everybody around them. It's some evil crap. And the thing is we're on both sides of the fence. That's the sick part of it. We have so many, and you said this earlier, whether it be Israel, Saudi Arabia, I don't care who it is, Muslim Brotherhood, all of them. This country is ruled by special interests. None of them give a shit about you as an American. And you're going to pay the price for it, and your children are going to die for it. And your great-great-great-grandchildren will be in debt and will pay for it, and it'll never be paid off. And these people don't care. They all have their special interests. You know, the illegal aliens have their special interests. The Saudis have theirs. Israel has theirs. Everybody's got theirs, and they're all got a bunch of freaking money, and they buy our politicians off. And you've got all these conflicting factors while you've got the government, whoever's in power, who's not in power, the neocons, the CIA, and all these different groups. Everybody playing and manipulating themselves around the world. We've been doing this for a long time, and it's falling. Our system of control in the world of this American, you know, monolithic power around the world is falling apart because the core principle of it is corrupt. And our economy's toast. You know, and it isn't about human rights, and it isn't about spreading democracy. People are getting shelled and killed in eastern Ukraine and you listen to Western media and it's all because they're Russian lovers, which is just horseshit. If you understand, I know people there, I know Russians, I study international news, so I get the truth, and I know how to filter through the crap and put things together. The people in eastern Ukraine want a federation. You know what a federation is? It's a republic. Because in Ukraine, it's such a Ukraine is corrupt like Russia was when Putin took over under Yeltsin. It was just totally corrupt. And what these oligarchs, everybody, it's all these rich billionaires just run the country and manipulate everything, and everybody just suffers. It's just terrible. And currently, under the Constitution, they appoint governors to these regions, these oblasts, okay? So what you're dealing with, it would be like in America, if you had that form of democracy, because, yes, they vote for the people in power, but it would be like, okay, you voted in Obama, now he wipes out all the governors and appoints a governor to your state. How'd you like to live into that kind of world? Because that's, in some states, that's the last battle we have against this socialist agenda of the president that we currently have, is your governors in your state, in your state legislation. Well, in a place like Ukraine, you have no power in your state. Everything is controlled from a central district. That's what they call democracy. And that's what your government, your current government, or parts of it, whatever fractions are, who are manipulated, who help crash the Ukraine and cause that revolution, and are backing this group, that's the kind of power they want. Because when you have centralized power, you control everything. You control the economy, you control the debt, you control the resources, you control the industry, and everybody else is a freaking slave. And that's and so two of these oblasts, you know, had a referendum vote record numbers and said we're independent, we're a semi-autonomous region. They never wanted to leave the Ukraine. They just wanted to be a frickin' republic, a federation. And they're blowing the shit out of them and bombing them, killing women and children, bombing hospitals, bombing orphanages, and then blaming Russia. This is the kind of bull crap you get when you watch Fox News or you listen to the talking heads who claim they're conservatives, because their foreign policy is tied to the neocon war machine. And you need to study that and understand that, because if you don't, then you're always going to be a voter who goes, well, Paul Ryan's a conservative. They are. Welcome to America, you know, in the right-left paradigm. Nothing changes. It will not change unless we educate ourselves, understand economics, understand foreign policy, understand how it impacts our country, understand how to read through, you know, through the bullcrap, the smoke and mirrors, and get to the truth of the matter. Why'd we go in Iraq? Nobody's willing to tell the truth. Some people say it was a total lie, weapons of mass destruction, blah, blah, blah. You know, I said before, it's because he was trading in non-U.S. petrodollars, and they had to blow him up because he wouldn't kiss ass. It really was that simple. So he had to go. And you listen to Cheney said, if we tear up, you know, back in when Bush Sr. said, I didn't want to go into Iraq because if we tore it up, it would be a quagmire and it would all fall apart and then you'd have all these conflicts and situations. Well, after 9/11, they had the reason to go in. And they went in and did exactly what, in that interview, he said we didn't want to do. Well, in reality, they really wanted to do it. That's the problem. But that fit the narrative at the time, and they were able to go in and push Saddam out of that little country, whatever it is. I lost it. So
Kuwait.
This is the world Kuwait. This is the world we live in, and it's insane out there. And the problem is we're in the middle of it, manipulating it, propping up government, propping up a dictator. Then he doesn't do what we want. So then we, you know, try to use NGOs and send McCain over there in Newland and, you know, and try to get people to vote him out. And then if he doesn't get voted out, then we create some humanitarian catastrophe or a false flag or, you know, they have a little uprising and then somebody snipers a couple people. You'll see that is common. You know, it seems like somebody's shooting somebody all of a sudden. Oh, then everybody goes wild. Then the president and the Republican, mostly the Republicans, jump up. Oh, we got to go in there. They're killing people. They're killing their own people. And then next thing you know, we're blowing this hell out of a country and we destroy a country. I don't know anywhere as an American, and if you claim you're an American, you claim you're a conservative, or you claim you're a Christian, where you think that's okay. How can you think killing women and children and destroying countries to save women and children is a moral thing to do? There's a thousand other ways to work things out with other countries, especially when they're not our problem. What the hell are we doing in Iraq? Oh, oil, I guess, they were saying. We thought it was weapons of mass destruction. Funny how that works. You know, Ukraine, what in the hell do you think we're doing in a country that it would be like Russia coming over here and toppling Mexico and then embedding itself in the government and then planting missiles on our border? How would you like that as an American? Well, probably about as much as Putin likes it. You know, people don't even do the research. You know, 65% of the exports that come out of Ukraine go to Russia. 5 to 6 million Ukrainians, open border world between those two countries, work in Russia because it's a better economy. And we went in there and messed that up, and then we point the finger at Putin and say, oh, it was all Putin. What do you mean? The guy had just put $15 billion on the table saying, I'm going to lend you $15 billion. We're going to cut gas price down to this, like a nonprofit situation to help you out because you're struggling. And he's the bad guy? You know, we always have to have an enemy for some reason. And the thing is, it's so easy. When your country's falling apart, nobody will look at themselves or look at, you know, their own life or their own politician that they vote in and say, we need to work on America and solve our problems and fix this mess that we're living in. And then the news and the media and the talking heads jump up and go, look, there's 200 children were kidnapped. Oh, my God. Oh, God, we got to go blow them up. But people dying all over the world all the time. There's bad people rule countries all over the frickin' world. There's a lot of those bad people we support or put into power. You know, you got to stop and say, what the hell is going on and why aren't these politicians taking care of America? Why is our border not secured? Why did the NDAA just get passed again without a debate? Why is the NSA spying on American citizens? And why didn't that get solved? Why is this situation with the IRS ongoing and not getting fixed? Why do we have a president that continues to change laws at his desk when it's Congress that's supposed to write laws and he's supposed to implement the laws? If anybody, you know, you didn't like it when Bush did it, don't like it when Obama does it. Don't like it when any president does it. There's too much power. It's a dictatorial power. And it's just about complete. And you can thank the Bush era because he's the one that started it. And if you can't deal with that, then you're just another Republican drone. You've got to wake up because if you don't, we're in trouble. And I just, like I said, that article, Israel just freaking blew up 9 targets in Syria. That's an act of war. So we got ISIL, ISIS, whatever the hell you want to call them. You know, the mad army with the Nikes and the cool black uniforms and the Toyota trucks funded by America through Jordan, through Turkey to topple Assad. Then they got too big. Now they're moving out and trying to carve out their own caliphate, a multi-country, you know, zone. And they're trying to carve it out. You got Assad's been in there battle-ridden, lost 170,000 people, millions of people, you know, displaced. Women and children, Christians, you know, Syria is where all the Christians went when we blew up Iraq because Assad had a multicultural country. Everybody was welcome. Took in massive refugees of Christians. And now we're funding these moderate groups, and they're killing Christians. And we're trying to topple this guy, and now we got this 10, 15,000 force strong, armed to the teeth, millions of dollars in their pocket. Oh, how'd that happen? I don't know. Check our ally out, Saudi, Qatar. You know, so the whole place is going to go to hell, and it's going to pull Russia into the middle of it. It's going to pull Iran into it, and I don't know what it takes to wake people up. We just left. We just left, Rex. One of the most contentious conversations we've had as a country for years. That whole war in Iraq, and we got people going, well, hell, we need to go back in. You know, and if they can convince enough people You don't spend all their focus while your economy goes to shit. You know, college-educated kids still can't find jobs. Borders are wide open. And if they can convince enough people that this is important and this is what we need to focus on, then we got another war. And it's just amazing to me. It isn't like, I mean, from Vietnam to Iraq was a big span of time, so people kind of go through a generation, you know, kind of forget about stuff. This was just like a couple years ago, folks. And here we are. And we're putting the same bastards right back in power that are part of the whole start of this in the Bush era. Without even a blip or a blop, we got one guy out. One guy, Cantor. It's just unbelievable to me. I figured people would have had enough, but I guess not. You know, I don't know. How big a war do you need? How big of a depression do you need? Because inflation hasn't even hit yet. It's hit, and you see it everywhere if you pay attention, but it hasn't even hit. They printed $4.5 trillion. Our debt's at $17.3 trillion. Never in the history of our country have we ever been spread out this thin. And our thing is, another war? I don't know, man. People must be nuts, Rex. I don't know. Anyway, that's my close, baby.
Yeah, well, the bigger war and the bigger depression, foregone conclusions, going to occur. I mean, that's just the hard reality of it. So accept it. But accepting it doesn't mean go hide in your church or, you know, be an armchair, you know, internet political activist droning on and on about the New World Order. You don't even know what the friggin' New World Order is. All Rothschild this and the Queen and the Vatican. And you sound like not Austin Powers, Mike Myers from So I Married an Ex-Murderer. You know, it's the Pentagon. the Queen, the Gettys, the Rothschild, the Vatican, and Colonel Sanders before he went teats up. Okay, it's a little loony. Are there people trying to create a global feudal system, a one-world government? Yes, they've been doing it for centuries. Are there people who want to kill you simply because you're not a Muslim? Yes, they've been doing it for at least 14 centuries. Are there people who want to take away your guns because they want to control your country? Yes, that is always what they do. All right, these are the dangers that are out there. How do you solve them? Well, these are the same friggin' dangers, just a different magnitude, that the Founding Fathers faced in 1776 and 1787. And they wrote a constitution. And some of the globalists were the Founding Fathers. What do you think Alexander Hamilton is? He's a European monarchist elitist banking tool, right? But he still got some things right. And what we got was not perfect, but it was more perfect. We have the blueprint. We have the answers. We also have the market and the technology and the innovation to solve the problems that we have. But some people don't like problems being solved. In fact, a lot of the banking and corporate interests and their buddies in government like to create problems. They show up, they set your house on fire, and then their buddy comes around the corner to sell you the water to put it out. That's how the game works. And they do it in different ways to get different people as long as they can keep us divided. So for all the libtards, they show up with the environment, the global change, the climate warming, the melting polar bears, all that crap, right? So we have to destroy the corporations from polluting. Well, that sounds good. Let's do that, right? Or, the poor students who are trying to get educated, they got all these loans that they can't pay. Well, why'd you take out the loan in the first place? Maybe you shouldn't have gone to college. Maybe you should have taken the 8-year plan and got a job in the meantime, right? But so now we got to fix that problem by doing what? Well, let's let them work it off. How about they serve in the military or government civil service? Oh, that's great. Now we got a real fascist mentality going on here where basically you get stuff from government in order to serve as a cog in the machine. Think about that. I'm not talking about signing up for the military because you feel compelled to do it. I'm talking about a conscription of sorts in order to get your college education paid for. That's not sane, okay? Or they show up for you righties, right? Well, the UN is coming in here to take away your guns, and plus all the fuzzy foreigners are crossing the southern border, so we got to have to kick some ass. Vote for me. I'm a Republican. That's not how you measure your legislators and your administrators. You measure them against their faithfulness to the Constitution. To the Constitution. That is the blueprint. That's what causes the division of power. That is what keeps your sovereignty in your hands, which is not absolute because you do live on this planet with 7 billion other people, and you live in this country with 300 million people. But wherever we don't have shared responsibility, it's my life. It's your life. We don't have to live the same life. We don't have to have the same views. We only have to agree on those broad general principles of common defense and building the conditions for the institutions of civil society, for free associations and private enterprise to fill in the gap, and only the government does those few things that it is intended to do. Common defense. Invading Iraq, poking Putin in the eye, and threatening China is not common defense. That is conflict isolationism. And then you turn around and accuse us of being the isolationists. Well, you know, those guys are somewhat conservative, but, you know, then they go off on this isolationist stuff. Well, we have to be able to defend ourselves. You don't defend yourself in Iraq. Well, but Israel. Well, that's Israel's problem. Out of all the countries in the Middle East, they got nukes. They've got F-16s. They've got a more potent and lethal air force. As Chris was telling you, they just struck 9 targets inside Syria. So they can fend for themselves. They chose to live over there in a sea of Islam, right? I'm not saying that we don't get involved, we don't act as an honest broker. But when you start picking and choosing sides in the quagmire that is the Middle East, you will invariably cause more damage and gain more enemies than you will solve. We've learned that lesson. So even if you didn't think that was the case in 2001, 2002, 2003, even 2006, it's 2014, baby, and it didn't work out. You don't throw good money after bad, and you don't spill more blood after blood just because you've already done it. And you don't cut and run either. We're not going to cut and run. Ooh, we're afraid. We're not afraid. All right? You people are so screwed up that we cannot help you. Despite yourselves, we can't help you. All right? So figure out your own shit. But let me tell you this. See you in New York? Okay, come to New York, pal. Let's see you come to New York. Let's see what we do to you. Right? We do have an NSA. It should not be spying on 300 million American citizens, but it sure as hell should be figuring out what Al-Qaeda and ISIS and Sunni this and Shia that are up to. And when you get the intel that they're planning something, which we knew before 9/11, then instead of waiting, you go over there and you kill them. And you don't have to start a war and invade a whole country. These people operate in small, independent cells and do all sorts of crazy stuff. Well, you send over a couple of covert teams, you cut their heads off, and you come back home. You do that once, twice, three times, I guarantee you, they will stop screwing with you. That's defense. Invading a country, because you see, our military was designed post-World War II basically to be a country toppler. And then here come these terrorists. So we launch a war on terror, and instead of actually fighting terrorists, we go toppling governments. Well, just because that's what we're used to doing doesn't mean that that's what we should be doing. We should be killing terrorists. That does not require the invasion of other countries. You can do it with drones. You can do it with small units. You can do it with intelligence. And if any of these other pansy countries don't like it, screw them. You have a bigger military, a sounder economy, and a free people. They can't do anything about it. But we're not there. We're saddled with debt. We have monetary manipulation. We got a regulatory environment that makes it almost impossible to do business. We got a collapsing healthcare system, a collapsing infrastructure, a diminishing military capacity, and we're morally retarded. You really think that you're in position to dictate to the rest of the world what they should be doing? You can't even fix your own backyard. Why? Because you keep listening to Fox News, to that moronic cheerleader Hannity, to the big boob blondes on Fox, to the idiots on talk radio, and you somehow think that makes you a conservative. Well, that doesn't do it. So go out there. Talk about conservative principles. Show people the error of their ways, that they're being misled by the so-called conservative Republicans who are neither conservative nor interested in a republic. They're basically just running the Democrat playbook, only they're doing it with rhetoric that appeals to the mass of America. And let's get a takeover, because if you don't do it now, there's going to be a collapse. And people are so weak and so easily managed that when the dollar collapses and food isn't getting to them, they will do anything. They will steal it from you. They will kill you. And then everybody will feel so bad and it will be so chaotic, they will turn to whoever promises to restore order. And you will end up with an American dictatorship, and it will take decades, if not centuries, to revolt against it. The conditions are ripe for this to happen. The collapse is imminent. What are you going to say that you did? Well, I could have done something, but I was too busy stuffing my face with Cheetos and watching, you know, America's Got Football or whatever, you know, football. You know, come on. This is important stuff. Get busy. Wake up the idiotic masses. Reach out to them. Get them involved. Let's take down Cochrane on Tuesday. Let's finish out the primary season strong, and let's send a clear message to this insipid, squishy Republican leadership that they had actually better follow through on their rhetoric, that they had actually better operate within the Constitution, and that for the next two friggin' years, they had actually better stop Obama and not try to force-feed another friggin' Bush on us. The other side's already preparing their broke blunder of Benghazi for her next neocon run. So let's get out there and fix it. This is exciting because rarely does a people get the opportunity to work together to fight for something true and good. We have that. So quit nitpicking with each other about whether marijuana should be legal or gay marriage or we have to save the babies. I agree we have to save the babies. You're not going to save the babies by passing a law against abortion. You're only going to do that by convincing people to stop killing babies. Stop hiding in your churches. Stop following, you know, multi-million-dollar pastors with stadium churches who are telling you that if you pray enough and if you wait long enough, you'll be rich too. And start doing the work. The work is in the culture. The work is in the society. The work is person to person. And put these governments back in their box, which is the Constitution. Stop towing the Republican line, and stop fooling around and futzing around with issues that don't matter. Unite on the basic principles: the Constitution, the rule of law, private property, sound money, and peace through strength. A strong ass-kicking military that is not going to mess with anybody, but should anybody mess with us, they will be killed. End of story. This is the time to do it. Get out there. Get the show out there. Thank you for sharing it. Get people to come listen. Spread the word. Get these ideas out there. Make it happen, because America can be America again. But only you can make it happen. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, go to our page. Go to Chris's group. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
And the thunder of liberty rumbles on.
Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper.
I invited the late
together.
General Bill Odom to address my Thursday congressional luncheon group. General Odom, a former NSA director, called the Iraq War the greatest strategic disaster in American history, and told the surprised audience that he could not understand why Congress had not impeached the president for pushing this disaster on the United States. History continues to prove the general's assessment absolutely correct. In September 2002, arguing against the U.S. attack on Iraq, I said the following on the House floor. No credible evidence has been produced that Iraq has or is close to having nuclear weapons. No evidence exists to show that Iraq harbors al-Qaeda terrorists. Quite to the contrary, experts on this region recognize Hussein as an enemy of al-Qaeda and a foe to Islamic fundamentalism. Unfortunately, Congress did not listen. As we know, last week, the second largest city in Iraq, Mosul, fell to the al-Qaeda-allied Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Last week, an al-Qaeda that had not been in Iraq before our 2003 invasion threatened to move on the capital, Baghdad, after it easily overran tens of thousands of Iraqi military troops. The same foreign policy experts who lied us into the Iraq war are now telling us that we must reinvade Iraq to deal with the disaster caused by their invasion. They cannot admit they were wrong about the invasion being a cakewalk that would pay for itself, so they want to blame last week's events on the 2011 U.S. withdrawal from Iraq. But the trouble started with the 2003 invasion itself, not the 2011 troop withdrawal. Anyone who understands cause and effect should understand this. The Obama administration has said no option except for ground troops is off the table to help the Iraqi government in this crisis. We should not forget, however, that the administration does not consider special forces or the CIA to be boots on the ground. So we may well see Americans fighting in Iraq again. It is also likely that the administration will begin shipping more weapons and other military equipment to the Iraqi army in the hopes that they might be able to address the ISIS invasion themselves. After years of U.S. training costing as much as $20 billion, it is unlikely the Iraqi army is up to the task. Judging from the performance of the Iraqi military as the ISIS attacked, much of that money was wasted or stolen. A big U.S. government weapons transfer to Iraq will no doubt be favored by the U.S. military-industrial complex, which stands to profit further from the Iraq meltdown. This move will also be favored by those in Washington who realize how politically unpopular a third U.S. invasion of Iraq would be at home, but who want to do something in the face of the crisis. Shipping weapons may be an action short of world war, but it usually leads to war, and as we have already seen in Iraq and Syria, very often these weapons fall into the hands of the al-Qaeda we are supposed to be fighting. Because of the government's foolish policy of foreign interventionism, the U.S. is faced with two equally stupid choices. Either pour in resources to prop up an Iraqi government that is close ally with Iran, or throw our support in with al-Qaeda in Iraq, as we have done in Syria. I say we must follow a third choice, ally with the American people and spend not one more dollar or one more life attempting to remake the Middle East. Haven't we already done enough damage?